Good morning, everybody. The Arizona Board of Behavioral Health Examiners will now come to order. It is June 9th, 2023 at 9 a.m. Could we have a roll call, please? Kimberly Bailey.
Present.
Robert Charles. Mary Coonrod.
Present.
Cedric Davis. Patricia Dobratz.
Good morning.
Lynette Hennigan.
Here.
Holly Knapp.
Present.
Megan Kramer.
Present.
Adelisa Meek.
Present.
Diane Palacios.
Hello, good morning.
Mark Shen.
Morning.
Antoine Trotter.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Patricia Dobratz. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and the board's chairperson. At this time, I'd like to remind everybody, including board members, make sure that your phones are turned off or on silent, please. And for your convenience throughout the meeting, there's vending machines right out those doors, and then across from the elevators are the restrooms, should you need those. A couple of reminders, this is an open meeting, and it is being recorded. The audio from the meeting will be posted on the board's website. Please be sure, if you're speaking on the record, that you speak clearly and into the microphone. In order to protect privacy, please keep in mind if it's necessary to refer to clients or former clients, even if they are complainants in a matter, please refer to them by initials only. At this time, I would ask my fellow board members and board staff to introduce themselves, starting with Ms. Knapp. Holly Knapp, professional member.
Good morning, Mark Shen, professional member.
Hello, Diane Palacios, professional member.
Good morning, Dr. Lubet Hennigan, professional member.
Kimberly Bates,
Mary Coonrod, public member.
Megan Kramer, public member.
Good morning, Adelisa Meek, professional member.
Erin Yabu, deputy director.
Toby Zaval, executive director.
Mona Baskin, assistant attorney general, representing the board.
Thank you, everybody. If I look out there confused, it's because we used to have a clock on that back wall, and now it's in front of me, and so I'm trying to make sense of everything. I apologize. We are first going to go to agenda item number 3, which are our minutes 3A, February 8th, 2023, teleconference meeting minutes. Due to quorum, we will need to table 3A. 3B are May 5th, 2023, general meeting minutes. Ms. Kramer, Mr. Shen need to abstain. Otherwise, is there a motion to approve those minutes?
Palacios moves.
Bailey second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. 3C are May 5th, 2023, executive session minutes for agenda item 5A. Due to quorum, we need to table that as well. 3D are May 5th, 2023, executive session minutes for agenda item 7B. Ms. Kramer, Mr. Shen will need to abstain from that. Is there a motion to approve?
Make approve.
Bailey second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. And 3E are May 24th, 2023, teleconference meeting minutes. Ms. Palacios needs to abstain, but is there otherwise a motion to approve?
Yes. Okay.
Don't fight over. I need a motion.
Nap second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. All right, next we're going to go to agenda item 4, which is our consent agenda. The cases on the consent agenda appear with a board staff recommendation. Board members have reviewed all of the materials for those matters and were prepared to vote as it appears on the agenda. I will call out some of those cases one by one to see if there's anybody here who wishes to pull that matter. What I mean by pulling that matter is that you're a party to the case and you disagree with the recommendation and would like to address the board. Okay, so I'm going to go through and see if there's anybody here to pull those matters. 4A are cases recommended for dismissal. Anybody who wishes to pull Eric Elfrey? A2, Myrna Garcia. A3, Andrea March. A4, Madison Rhodes. Is there a motion to dismiss cases A1 through 4?
Coonrod, so move.
Make second.
And again, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Motion carries. That will take us to 4B, our cases recommended for dismissal with a letter of concern. Is there anybody here who wishes to pull B1, Catherine Cesar? B2, Robert Statham? B3, Philip Stanfield? Are you Philip Stanfield?
No.
Okay. Complainant, and you wish to pull that matter?
Yeah.
Okay, give me 1 second. Is Mr. Stanfield present?
Is that even on the phone?
Perfect. Is there a motion to dismiss with a letter of concern B1 and 2?
Matt moves it.
Palacio second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Let me go back to B3. And you, Mr. Vogler, is that correct? Okay, if you want to come forward, please. And then licensee and counsel, you'll have a chance after the complainant.
Just here.
Yep, right there. And then if you press the button on that mic, it'll turn green. Yep.
Thanks.
I don't think it came on, though, so you might, can you try again? So the way that we're going to proceed is board staff will have a chance to present information to us, and then you'll have a chance to address the board. You'll have up to 5 minutes to do so. We have read all the materials in the matter, but you'll have a chance to address us, and then licensee and his counsel will have a chance to address us after that.
Okay.
So we'll start with board staff.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, as you're aware, this is on the consent agenda. Based on the review of the investigative record, there did not appear to be clear and convincing evidence to support a violation of unprofessional conduct. However, in review of the information, it does appear that a dismissal with a letter of concern could be supported, as it would be the professional's responsibility to ensure that all clinical records meet the board's minimum standards. And that's all I have unless you have questions for me.
Thank you, Ms. Zavala. Do board members have any questions for board staff? As the complainant, you have up to 5 minutes now to address the board.
Okay, thanks. Well, thanks for taking this matter up. I appreciate that. Thank you for doing the diligence. However, I didn't bring the complaint merely because I was upset or I felt to waste my time. I brought it because it's important. And we're dealing with the matter of failure to report a mandatory incident. This is the heart of protecting our kids. For it to be dismissed, I don't want to use too much of an inflammation of a word, but like no big deal is what I got from the clinic. Like, this is not a big deal. Okay, well, it is a big deal. It's actually codified by criminal law, failure to report. So me being concerned about the welfare of my kids and seeing this professional who I hold at blanket value is going to abide by the ethics that you guys set forth as the licensing body. And you guys have a responsibility to ensure public trust. Or what reason is to have such a board? There isn't. So that being said, I tried to rectify this with the clinic and the licensee and got dismissed. Like, no big deal. Okay, it is a big deal. Because clearly, this incident that I believe was concerning did rise to the level of DCS investigating. Now, they found it unfounded, but that's not the point. The point is a incident was presented, or at least at face value, to my belief, presented to this licensee, and nothing was done. He didn't follow the proper protocol. I think Mark Brnovich's website says 72 hours to do either telephonic or electronic. And simply it wasn't done, the best that I can tell. Now, I'm limited by the means and resources of coming to that conclusion. I can't definitively say whether he did or didn't. But given the facts and evidence that I found, he didn't do it. Then I spoke with your staff, who was great, by the way, but they offered me no insight into how they reached their conclusion. Basically, take our word for it. Okay, thank you. I'm for having the investigation play out. And then when it was concluded, I was told that I can't see any of that body of work. So again, it comes back to public trust. how can I ensure that things are being done properly to ensure public trust, and specifically to the sanctity of our kids? I mean, think about that, how raw that is, to have an 11-year-old sit there with a grown man who is entrusted by the public and licensees by your body and not do what he's supposed to do. What if it was really egregious and he didn't report it and nothing else was found out about it? Then it goes unheard. And that's why you have mandatory reporting requirements. So much so, it's criminalized. And yet, nothing, no big deal. So, a letter of concern to me is great. It's kind of like saying, hey, something was wrong. And when I mean something was wrong, I don't know what was actually proven or disproven. Because you guys won't, now you guys being the entity, not anyone particularly, won't even let me look at the body of work to how that was concluded. I don't, you know, you can redact things that I don't want other people's information. I want to know when this is done, okay, you guys did your primary mission, and that's public trust, and I can feel relaxed and say, you know what, I can go forward and trust another licensee. Because at this point, it's not to say that you guys did bad or anyone did bad, I simply just don't know. And a letter of concern without disclosure of findings leads me to believe, well, I have to assume. And assumptions are problematic. Because am I assuming wrong? Am I assuming right? Either way, something happened to bring it to this level in this forum. So a level of concern is like something's wrong, but not really. Because a letter of concern, from what I understand, is not disciplinary in nature. So that's, I would hope the board would reconsider and either be more more transparent in their body of investigation, or reconsider their findings for you know, discipline. And we're not even at discipline, if I understand letter of concern. It sounds like it's a way to just get it along the agenda and have it closed out. So at this point, I hope you guys can at least be more transparent, or take it for what it is. And this is a 11-year-old boy sitting in this person's office telling them of a mandatory reporting incident, and nothing was done about it. There was no disclosure. And if I'm wrong, please let me know. I mean, I would like to be able to sit here and say, oh, actually, it was done properly. Because that also would restore my trust. And that's what we're all here for. So thank you.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions for the complainant? Okay. I would ask that you take your seat so the licensee and counsel can come forward. Thank you so much. And if you would turn the mic back on and introduce yourselves for the record, please.
I'm Jeff Hunter, counsel for Mr. Stanfield and Mr. Stanfield's
amendment. Thank you. You have up to 5 minutes now to address the board.
Thank you. We've read the report, and in reference to the mandatory reporting issues, they were reported timely to DCS. What DCS did or did not do is they were unsubstantiated by DCS. They were documented the phone calls made, and they were in terms of the documentation issue, there was some documentation that they were acknowledge that since the filing complaint, he's also taken the documentation. In terms of our concern, I can understand the person that I don't think that it's necessarily a documentation issue. We don't have to talk to people.
Right.
We don't have any contact with people. We get out of the management.
questions, we'll hear them.
Any questions for the licensee or counsel? All right. This will be our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. Mr. Sharon, I think you're leading the conversation.
Yeah, I just want to acknowledge, I appreciate the complainant and licensee attorney being here today. I agree with board findings that there's not clear and convincing evidence for unprofessional conduct.
Any other discussion?
I just want to say that documentation failures are always a substantive issue, in my opinion. It feels procedural, but just saying. No, that's okay. No, I understand that. And that's why, I mean, it doesn't rise to clear and convincing, but we take documentation very seriously because it's the only record of what happens in the room.
I agree, Ms. Kramer, and I think the letter of concern just kind of, you know, memorializes that, hey, that was a concern, and yes, there were steps that were taken, and that's great, but it still did happen and still is concerning, warranting all the things that were done subsequently. So I'm also in support of the findings.
And I think to just piggyback for the record, the letter of concern, I understand complainants' presentation that it may not seem like action taken, and it isn't. It's not disciplinary, but it does memorialize concerns that the board has and sends a message, and they're important. And we have that authority when something doesn't rise to clear and convincing. And then also there are procedural, procedural frameworks for how our investigations are done and what information is made public. And so I just wanted to note that for the record.
So I just wanted to, Mr. Shen, support your recommendation. The investigation also by the board was really thorough, and so I do feel like all of the findings that came out from the investigation and what they did find from all of the materials submitted, you know, walking through, you know, what was actually done, what wasn't, you know, what wasn't done, and then we did this recommendation, and it seems to really support everything that was brought out from the investigation. So I just wanted to kind of throw out there that it's a very thorough investigation, and that was the outcome.
Thank you. So Mr. Chen has made a motion to dismiss with a letter of concern. Is there a second?
Yes, a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Mr. Rogler, for being here. This will conclude this matter.
Complainant mentioned in regards to the investigation.
Of course.
I didn't want to interrupt the deliberation. I just wanted to cite R46207 confidential records. So when board staff receives a complaint, the complaint does go out to the licensee for a response, but after that point, the complainant, based on confidential records, is not privy to any of that confidential information that we've collected.
Thank you. We will go.
I'm sorry. We actually have to go back. So apparently we had a line out front here, and there was a complainant that was in line that wanted to pull one of the matters. So we are going to need to go back to 4A4. And in addition to that, we also have to go back to agenda item 4.3.
So A3 and A4 are being pulled.
That is correct.
So A3, Andrea March, give me one second. And who's pulling the matter? The complainant?
That is correct.
Is she on the phone?
Yes.
Is Ms. March present? Would you come forward, please?
The party you are trying to reach did not accept calls from numbers that are out.
This is Patricia Dobetz, the board's chairperson. Can you hear us?
Yeah.
Give me one second. Are you able to hear us now?
Well, it's very echoey.
I apologize. We're having issues with our phone system. Better now?
No, not really.
That's the best it's going to be.
Plus, I'm getting feedback when I speak. I'm assuming this is the Board of Behavioral?
It is. This is Patricia Dobrat, the Board's chairperson. For privacy reasons, we'll refer to you by your initials, which I believe are MS. Is that correct?
I cannot hear you. I'm sorry. I'm having a lot of trouble understanding.
Do you want to take a break to try and address?
Try.
All right. Can we let her know that we'll call back? Can she hear you guys better?
Can you hear me?
That's better. Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you, but I don't know if...
Okay, we have some audio difficulties, so we're going to move around here a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
All right, you can hear us better now, is that correct?
I can hear you a little better.
All right.
I still get feedback when I speak, but I guess I'll have to deal with that.
Okay, I apologize. You're very clear on our end, and it is being the meeting is being recorded, so the audio will be recorded and posted on the Board's website. I'm the board's chairperson, Patricia Dobrat, and just to set the scene for you, since you're not here, it is a public meeting, so there are members of the public present, and I'm here with my fellow board members as well as board staff, and then the licensee, Ms. March, is here as well. And this was on the consent agenda to be dismissed. The way that we'll proceed, board members have reviewed all of the materials in this matter. We'll hear a brief summary from board staff, and then you'll have up to 5 minutes to address the board, and then the licensee will have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay,
so
that's fine.
First, start with board staff.
Right. Madam Chair, members of the board, this matter is on the consent agenda. Based on the review of the investigative record, there did not appear to be clear and convincing evidence to support the complainant's allegations. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Do board members have any questions for Ms. Lavella? All right. As the complainant in this matter, it's now your chance to address the board. You have up to 5 minutes to do so.
To me?
Yes, as a complainant.
Okay, all right. Well, as you mentioned, I was notified that my case was recommended for dismissal due to a lack of evidence of unprofessional behavior. So, with that said, my expectations are quite low in this regard. But I'd like to begin by asking all of you to imagine being in the middle of a serious mental health crisis. You've worked with your therapist for several months. You've established what you think is a positive connection and a good rapport. You feel like you've benefited from their help. And then, all of a sudden, out of the blue, you're completely blindsided when they drop you as a patient without any warning whatsoever. How would you feel? Well, I can tell you how I felt and how I'm still feeling. I feel disrespected, betrayed, not heard, tossed aside, hurt, angry, insignificant. Those are just a few of the adjectives to describe how I was feeling. Needless to say, thanks to that one small act, I suffered more stress, more panic, and more anxiety over those next few months than I had previously. I wasn't offered a warm handover. There was no continuum of care. In fact, it took me a good year before I was able to find another therapist at a different behavioral health clinic. I was totally baffled and confused at the time, and still am now. All I know is that I was given very little in the way of an explanation. What was done to me may not have been illegal. It may not have gone against any rules established by the board. But it certainly was immoral, unprofessional, uncaring, and went against all the normal practices of the mental health profession. I would like to think this is not what you all stand for. What was done to me a year ago should never have happened. No person experiencing a serious trauma or mental health crisis should be left out in the cold the way I was. And if nothing else comes out of this hearing today, hopefully my testimony will prevent something like this from ever happening to anyone else again. At least not in this state, and not by the mental health professional in question. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Let me see if board members have any questions for the complainant. No questions? All right. As a licensee, you have up to 5 minutes now to address the board.
Thank you. I do want to say that I do feel for the client. She was not my actual direct client, as you know. And there were attempts to do the handoff that you also know.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions for licensee? All right, this will be our time to talk amongst ourselves and deliberate, so we ask that you not interrupt. And Dr. Hennigan, I believe you're leading this discussion.
Yes, so the investigation was very thorough, and
I'm sorry to interrupt. I handed it over before I should have. Sorry. I have a procedural question for Mr. Bauer, Ms. Baskin. Because we did have a motion and a vote, if we decided to do the same thing, do we need to do a new one? Do we have to rescind? Sorry.
We need to rescind and then make a new vote.
Okay, even if we're doing the same thing.
Correct.
Okay, sorry, I just wanted to procedurally
say. I need to make a motion to rescind.
Let's do that, yeah.
Okay. I make a motion to rescind our first motion.
To dismiss.
Nat, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay. I agree there doesn't appear to be clear convincing evidence to support the violation of professional conduct. So, a motion that we dismiss.
Palacios, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. And as we do appreciate you as the complainant being available via phone and participating, we have voted to dismiss the case. If you have any questions, you can follow up with board staff next week.
Who do I follow up with? I'm sorry.
Board staff. You can call next week.
What number would that be?
You can call the investigator that did the interview with you.
I see. Okay.
All right. This will conclude this matter. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ms. March. And then... Yes. Yeah, I wasn't going to go there if they weren't. A4, so the complainant, Mr. Johns, present. All right. And then Ms. Rhodes, are you present as well? Ms. Rhodes present. Do we know, was she present and left after we dismissed?
No,
I'm not that I'm aware of. Thank you. Before we move forward, I make a motion to rescind our original motion to dismiss this matter. Is there a second?
And again, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. I should move back to my seat, but I'm going to stay here for just a little longer. If you would turn your mic on, please, Mr. Jones. And we're first going to hear a brief summary from board staff.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this matter is on the consent agenda based on licensee's 9321 court appointment. In this matter, the board may want to consider dismissing the complaint pursuant to ARS 323281D1, which gives the board authority to dismiss complaints that are without merit. Complaints dismissed pursuant to this section cannot be disclosed by the board as a complaint on the licensee's complaint history. And something to note, this court-appointed document includes a parenting coordinator and did not provide psychotherapy services. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions for me.
Are there any questions for Ms. Law? Mr. Johns, is the complainant, you have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you very much for allowing me to be here today. This is very simple. When I talked to the PCC informed me that SD had made the courts that they did not go. And with you guys sitting here, it's an embarrassment that you brought that you guys said. I pulled the transcripts from that case where my judge instructed me, Mr. John, I take all the professional advice into my book. In doing so, my parenting time with my children was interrupted. Mother received my own sex with the children. Well, part of that problem is the PC that was over a case right on it. My children have the COVID vaccination. 2 months prior to me finding out. When I found out about it, I went to the PCP and I said, hey, mother, you're telling me this is 2 months ago. What happened? I said, no. She told me, well, Mr. Johns, we go to our court hearing. The judge tells me, Mr. Johns, I was in all the professional advice. She lied on the oath and said, well, Mr. Johns is pushing back on my vaccination, so I gave her the authority. My orders on Sunday, I said, it's time to get paid. Again, that was a lie. He was told to hurt me and my children. That's called on pizza. That was a lie. That I will be responsible for the attorney. The other thing she lied, the other thing is she took on the order. She said, I don't take notes from other professionals. This is what she's talking about. I take no notes. Well, she recommended my child be put on medication, but she's a social worker. She doesn't even have the authority to write a script, but she approved medication. She approved the 504 plan for special education for my son who had ADHD. Those children who I lost care with, which is something I didn't even do, are now fully on my cousin and had been since her report was written last year. They don't need the entire year. Their mother has not attended one counseling session to try and get their children back. But the PC lied, and I lost favor with my children. And you guys, they need to discuss that. She should not be. She's a public hazard. She's a public hazard. And she's in our court system, dealing with families every day. I don't deserve what she put me through. I don't deserve my kids to put me through. My kids are going to a therapist now, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, because of what they have endured and have on this field. And you guys are going to support that. So I should bring that along because she had a ring from the court. She's a public hazard. What are we going to do? The dismissing?
Do board members have any questions for Mr. John? This will be our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. Now, I believe you're reading the deliberation.
I am, and it seems from the investigation and documentation that we have before us is this is a matter because she was not acting as a counselor but was acting as a parenting coordinator that this board wouldn't oversee. I'd like to get my colleagues' opinions on that. That's just kind of what I'm seeing and interpreting.
I would agree. You want to go ahead?
No, go ahead.
I would agree. It isn't a judgment or an evaluation of what happened. That it isn't. We aren't here today to say nothing wrong happened, but that it's not something that it belongs in the courts. I'm glad to hear that we're taking it up with the court. That's where it belongs. I heard, this is a criminal matter. Agreed. If this is an issue going on in the courts need to do something about it. It just doesn't fall under our purview to decide that with those folks that are liaisoned and appointed by the courts. They're the ones in charge of that, is my understanding.
We really are only allowed to do everything that's set forth in our statutes, and so this is sort of outside of our jurisdiction.
My only thing is...
This is our time to talk about this. That's okay. And I appreciate the comments. And there is, we have authority within a specified framework that we have to operate under, whether we like it or not. I think memorializing that for the record. And Snap, did you want to make a motion?
Yeah, so I would just motion to dismiss as... It needs to go through the court process.
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. It's jurisdictional. We wish you the best of luck, Mr. Johns. Thank you.
Get out of here.
You might want to stay here.
All right. We are going to move to agenda item 4D, case recommended for acceptance of proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement. Krishna Bright, is there a motion to accept the proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement?
Plastias, motions.
Luke, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I am going to skip 4E at this time. My understanding is Ms. Palacios wants to fill that matter. However, the applicant's going to participate via phone, and I want to take a minute to figure that out after we get through the rest of the consent agenda before we take time doing that. Still got a 4F. Cases recommended for acceptance of proposed signed disciplinary consent agreement. F1, Yvonne Gathers. F2, Barbara Quaddy. Is there a motion for F1 and 2 to accept the proposed signed disciplinary consent agreement?
Palacios. Hennigan, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And 4G, our case is recommended for opening a complaint and acceptance of proposed signed disciplinary consent agreements. G1, Christy Brinton. G2, Jill Unruh. Is there a motion to open complaints and accept the proposed signed disciplinary consent agreements for G1 and 2?
Luke.
Last year, second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Yeah, we need a roll call for that.
Oh, I apologize. Kimberly Bailey?
Aye.
Mary Coonrod?
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz?
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan?
Aye.
Holly Knapp?
Aye.
Megan Kramer?
Aye.
Adelisa Meek?
Aye.
Diane Palacios?
Aye.
Mark Shin?
Aye.
Motion carries. I apologize. Thank you, Ms. Ball. Go to 4H, our case recommended for action regarding denying for unprofessional conduct. Mario Jones? You wish to come forward? Mr. Jones, if you'll turn that microphone on. And we're first going to hear from board staff.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, this matter is placed on the consent agenda for the denial of Mario Jones's license based on his substance use, current substance use issues. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Are there questions from board members? Mr. Jones, you have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you. My name is Mario Jones. I'm not really quite sure what to say. First, I'd like to say that I really appreciate the investigation manager. Jared Carver is very transparent. This is not my first time in front of the board. But this is the first time it's been that transparent communicated to me. And so, as I understand it...
Can I ask you to pull the microphone closer to you? I'm sorry.
As I understand it, there's been a pattern. There has been... I don't have a current currently I'm not using any substance. I did communicate that with Mr. Jarrett, but as it shows on paper, it looks like a pattern. So that makes sense. I guess the thing, to be totally transparent, the thing that's different is the substance is still in my hair follicle, apparently, or was when I took the hair follicle test. But the difference in the pattern is last year, with the separation of me and his wife for the final time. He did ancestral medicine. That's changing the pattern. To be honest, so as I told him before, like, I don't really have a desire. I'm not currently. And I don't see it happening moving forward. Is it still in my hair follicle? Yes, evidently. For how long? I do not know. I'm more than willing to take another test. I'm actually kind of quite tired of doing things. That's the different pattern.
Do you board members have any questions for Mr. Jones? Mr. Wallace, procedurally, if we move forward with denying for unprofessional conduct, the next steps or possibilities for Mr. Jones in the future, could you speak to that in terms of reapplying?
That is correct. And just to be, you know, just for the record, I want to state that Mr. Jones did do two hair follicle tests, and both of them came up positive. And it's typically up to 90 days that a substance will stay in your system. Yes, if board members did find for denial for his license, he'd be able to reapply at any time. And at that time, again, he would need to provide information to the board members that he is clean and sober.
And I have a question as it relates to the Impaired Professionals Program. Is that something?
He's an applicant.
So it doesn't apply to applicants. You have to be a licensee.
Any other questions from board members?
I have a procedural question, too. So do we open the complaint first and then deny, or is it one motion?
Well, I mean, it's on the agenda to open and deny for unprofessional conduct. So if you want to memorialize it and open it, find for the violation, deny it, or you can just move to approve the denial of the application for unprofessional conduct.
I think you can just say for the record, we really want you to succeed and to get your license, so we can see you again. Or not see you again, I guess.
To see your name pass.
Yes, correct.
So is there a motion to deny for unprofessional conduct?
Any motions?
For a second?
Please, seconds.
Roll call, please. Kimberly Bailey?
Aye.
Mary Coonrod?
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz?
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan?
Aye.
Polly Knapp?
Aye.
Megan Kramer?
Aye.
Adelisa Meek?
Aye.
Diane Palacios?
Aye.
Mark Shen?
Aye.
Motion carries. We do wish you the best of luck.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Now, that will conclude our consent agenda. Mr. Ball, I know our first two disciplinary matters will be via phone. Do we want to take a break to look into this? Or
are they on?
Yes. Okay. It is 9:49. Let's come back at 10 o'clock, and we'll move on to agenda item number 7 at that time. We are coming back to order. It is 10 a.m. and we are moving to agenda item number 7. There are complaints and disciplinary matters. This is the time and place scheduled for the board's review of disciplinary matters. They'll be heard by us pursuant to the authority given to us in ARS 323281. Those licensees or applicants on today's agenda received by mail a board meeting notice, which included a list of potential actions the board could take once we reach deliberations. This list is not exclusive, and there may be other options that the board considers. Board members have reviewed all the materials submitted for each case, and the board will first hear a summary of the case from board staff. Once staff is done, other interested parties, including the complainant if applicable, and the professional will be given an opportunity to address the board. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask that those speaking do not take time repeating information that the board already has. You and your legal counsel, if applicable, will collectively be given 5 minutes to address the board, or time equal to what it took board staff to present its case, whichever is greater. Once board has heard from the parties, we'll move into our deliberations. We ask again that you not interrupt during this time, as it's our time to talk amongst ourselves. If it's necessary to refer to clients or former clients at any time, again, including if they're a complainant, please use initials only. Please keep in mind that the board has a civility policy that prohibits disorderly conduct. Anybody in violation of that policy will be removed from the meeting room. We are first going to go to 7A, Andy Buckin. And is, I believe, the complainant, Mr. Johns, if you will come forward, and then the licensee and counsel will be on the phone, is my understanding. Good morning, this is Patricia Dobratz, the board's chairperson. Is Mr. Goldberg on the line? And is your client present as well?
He is.
All right, would you introduce yourselves to the record, please?
Yes, this is Michael Goldberg.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was breaking up a little bit. Andy Buffkin.
All right. Thank you both so much. We've just called the matter. The complainant, Mr. Johns, is also present, and we're first going to hear a brief summary from board staff.
Following a review of the investigative record, there does not appear to be clear and convincing evidence to support the complainant's allegations. However, following a review of the investigative record, there does appear to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16P, failing to conform to minimum practice standards as developed by the board as it relates to consent for treatment, treatment plan, and client record. This recommendation is based on the following. Since 7/7, licensee has been licensed as an LPC. Since 2009, licensee has been in private practice. From 8/19 to 1/20, licensee provided behavioral health services to a client. In review of the client's clinical record, there were a number of documentation deficiencies present. Licensee's consent for treatment was missing 5 elements. Although some of mother's signatures are dated, not all contain a corresponding date, not all complainant signatures are dated, and only some of the forms are signed by licensee. The client's record did not contain a treatment plan. Licensee's progress notes were missing the time spent providing behavioral health services. Licensee represented the following during her investigative interview. Licensee might have thought she had everything in there and should have maybe gone over it with a fine-tooth comb to make sure it was up to date. Licensee went over the goals and options for treatment during the initial intake. Licensee currently has a treatment plan template because she does a lot of EMDR and does treatment plans with everyone. Licensee has since updated her consent forms, which appear to meet the board's minimum requirements. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you, Ms. Zavala. Do board members have any questions for board staff? Mr. Johns, you have up to 5 minutes to address the board as the complainant.
Prior to 2021, I had never...
And I would ask you to talk into the mic so make sure they can hear you on the phone. Sorry.
Prior to 2021, I had never heard of Andy Buffkin prior to that time. I take care of 100% now of my children's appointments, whether it be educational appointments, medical appointments. I never heard of Ms. Buffkin prior to my appointment last year. Your mother stated, do you remember Ms. Buffkin from back in the day? No, I don't, because I don't have any record. Ms. Buffkin does not have record of doing an intake with me. She has no record of contacting me. When I tried to call Ms. Buffkin via phone, she did not respond to those calls. I have received no documentation in support of my children, and our court orders clearly state that both parties are to be involved. To this date, I have never spoke to her. So she's clearly violated the orders that were set forth for child custody.
Anything additional?
Short and sweet, and there needs to be something done. As I said prior to this case kind of contains the first case. I am seeking legal representation. This is nonfeasance. I do have the document supporting where it has affected my parenting time, and I will be filing this case.
Thank you, Mr. Johns. Do board members have any questions for the complainant? All right, Mr. Goldberg, you and your client have up to 5 minutes now to address the board.
Thank you. My client has been in communication with board staff about the documentation and deficiencies that were brought to her attention, and she would like to address some of the improvements that she's made with you right now. Thank you.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to inform, the board that I have made all necessary improvements to ensure that all my professional written consent forms, treatment plans, and progress notes are current and up to date with all the AZ statutes, rules and regulations, based off your recommendations.
Okay. Anything else that either of you would like to add?
No.
Do board members have any questions for the licensee? No questions? All right, this will be our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. And Ms. Snapp, I believe you're leading this one.
I am. There are two different things that are sort of coming to mind when I think about this that I'd like to kind of get your feedback on. And I mean, the first one, it appears from the investigation that there were signed consents by the complainant, and there seems to just be a disagreement in that matter. I don't know what we could or if there's anything to be done there at all. And then the other piece, just to talk about, because there were so many items missing from the clinical record and documentation standard, I think it does rise to the level of clear and convincing. They just weren't there. But I'd like to hear what you guys think.
I think with the clear and convincing standard regarding the first issue, like you said, with the consent, it's difficult to refute that without anything else that we have. But I do agree that the documentation is egregious and rises to disciplinary concerns, just in my mind. Do you want to make a motion?
I do. So I move to make a finding in violation of ARS 3232516P, failing to conform to minimum practice standards as it relates to documentation standards in AACR 46110-1103, the consent to treat, treatment plan, and client record.
Bailey, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And what should we do about it?
Well, so I think certainly, you know, the licensee spoke to having updated those forms, but I think some continuing education in this case could be important. I think being able to check the box and updating the form is one thing, but gaining some knowledge around expectations and ethical standards would be positive as well.
I think in addition to, you know, the documentation, it would be some education in terms of working with families and high conflict families, because I think there could have been other steps taken in a situation like this that weren't, and so making sure that she's working with families that crossing her T's and dotting her I's is really important.
So I guess I'm thinking we offer a consent agreement for 12 months with requirements of education in documentation, treatment planning, and then maybe a three-unit class surrounding working with high-conflict families.
CEs?
Mm-hmm.
Can I make a clarification on that? The documentation, so typically it would be the three CEUs in documentation. Are you wanting an additional three CEUs in treatment planning?
Oh, no.
Okay, because the documentation will cover the informed consent, the treatment plan, as well as progress notes where she was deficient in all of those areas. So the board will be offering the licensee a consent agreement for 12 months. She would be required to take three CEUs in documentation consistent with Arizona rules and laws. She'd also be required to take three CEUs in working with high-conflict families, and if not signed, invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remanded to a formal hearing. Would that be your motion?
Yes. Is there a second?
Lost your second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Patricia Dobrat.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Holly Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Adelisa Meek.
Aye.
Diane Palacios.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Johns, for being here. Thank you, Mr. Goldberg and Ms. Bufkin, for being here. Mr. Goldberg, if you want to stay on the line, I believe we're calling your next matter.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, can I stop now?
Yep, your matter is concluded.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. 7D, Floyd Godfrey. Mr. Goldberg, do we know if Mr. Godfrey is on the line as well?
I don't know. I don't think he is. I don't think he is. I could text him while we're talking, but I don't think so.
All right. Are the complainants here? Mr. Dapprisma. All right. Before we get started, I would make a motion to consolidate cases 2023-0157, 0158, 0159, and 0163. Is there a second?
Really
second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And Mr. Goldberg, you're okay with us proceeding with board staff?
Yeah.
All right. Ms. Savala?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. This matter before you today is here for your consideration of accepting consent agreement for the voluntary surrender of Mr. Godfrey's license, which would be considered a revocation. The board received a complaint in March of 23 from four separate complainants in regards to inappropriate behavior by Mr. Godfrey. This information was brought to the board at our emergency board meeting on 5/24. And at that time, the board members offered an interim consent agreement so that Mr. Godfrey would not be able to work under his license, as well as issued him an order for a psychosexual evaluation. After consideration of that, instead of completing the evaluation for the psychosexual evaluation, Mr. Goldberg and his client, Mr. Godfrey, came before board staff to see if we would consider accepting the voluntary surrender of his license. I'm hoping that you all have, and if you haven't, take the opportunity to read the consent agreement. I think that the consent agreement has an L violation, which is impaired judgment. The findings of facts capture enough of Mr. Godfrey's unethical behavior so that if he were able to get a license in another state or here, they would be aware that they would probably want to issue a psychosexual evaluation before granting that license. And that's all I have for you today, unless you have questions for me.
Do board members have any questions for Mr. Godfrey? Mr. Goldberg, would you like to address the board?
I don't have anything to say, no.
Anybody have any questions for Mr. Goldberg? Mr. Shen, I believe you're leading this discussion on motion. Or did I make that up?
No, it's me. I think in light of what we have before us, I think it's appropriate to accept the signed agreement. So I move that we accept the proposed consent agreement for the voluntary surrender of the licensee's license.
And again, second. Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Holly Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Adeline Zameek.
Aye.
Diane Palacios.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Goldberg, for being available via phone.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Have a good one. All right. To agenda item number 7B, Busway Bustos. Is the complainant here for that matter? All right. And I do need to recuse, so I am going to be turning this case over to Ms. Smeek.
Thank you. If we may start by asking board staff to give us a summary of the case.
Following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16K, engaging in any conduct or practice that is contrary to the recognized standards of ethics in the behavioral health profession as it relates to the NASW Code of Ethics 1.06C, Conflicts of Interest. This recommendation is based on the following. From 9/21 to 1/23, licensee was employed at agency as a lead therapist. From 8/21 to 4/22, licensee provided direct behavioral health services to client through a separate behavioral health agency. In 5/22, client was interviewed for an employment position at agency in which licensee conducted the interview. Licensee subsequently hired client without informing anyone at agency at the time of hire that the client was his former client at a separate agency. It was not until roughly 9/19/22 when client filed a complaint with agency against licensee that agency became aware client was a former client of licensee's. Agency found that licensee blurred boundaries with client and should not have hired client for a role that licensee supervised. Furthermore, agency sent licensee an email with their findings asking if licensee agreed or disagreed, and licensee did not indicate that he disagreed with anything. During an investigative interview, licensee represented the following. When licensee was leaving his previous employment where he treated client, he informed client that he worked at agency if he wanted to seek services there. Licensee never informed anyone at agency that client was a former client of his when he hired client. It was licensee's decision to hire client since he was the hiring manager. Licensee knew client's treatment ended and thought it was fine. It was highly concerning that licensee informed client that he worked at agency in case he wanted to seek services there, yet hires him as an employee roughly a month after licensee terminated services with client. Furthermore, licensee failed to seek any guidance or inform anyone that the client was a former client of his when he interviewed him, then subsequently hired him as one of his subordinates. Additionally, only after client filed a complaint with agency and this board complaint did licensee realize the inappropriateness of hiring a former client of his. Licensee acknowledges now that this was inappropriate and agrees he would never consider hiring a former client of his in the future. And members of the board, I want to draw your attention to there was a supplement document that was uploaded to the portal a few days ago from Mr. Ryan, the attorney that represents Mr. Bustos, and I would respectfully say that myself disagree with what is shared in there. Board oftentimes uses the K violation for the code of ethics to recognize different types of violations that we see fit. I think there's a suggestion that we're trying to redefine dual relationship. Again, we disagree with that. I think it's more of a conflict of interest, and that's what we're putting before the board members today. But again, after reading the report again and after reading the analysis, I do think that this is a case where the members could consider possibly a non-disciplinary consent agreement based on the fact that Mr. Bustos recognizes that this was not appropriate. It appears to be the first time. But those are just some thoughts. With that said, I think the violation occurred, but that's something for you to consider. And that's all I have unless you have questions for me.
Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Alana? Is a complainant on the phone? It's complainant?
I don't believe so. Is a complainant for this matter here? I don't believe so.
Okay. So, Mr. Bustos, we would like to give you and Mr. An opportunity to make a statement. At this time, you have 5 minutes.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. So this entire situation has been a harrowing experience. In hindsight, I would have alerted Bio the Soul of my former client therapist relationship with TO as soon as I learned he had applied for employment there. Further, I would have never agreed to act in an employment supervisory capacity over TO. At the time, I believe my action was a sound employment-related decision. I now realize I did not evaluate this as I should have. Whether the precise language of the Arizona statute on dual relationships precluded this, if I could go back, I would have done things very, very differently. The situation or anything remotely like it will never happen again. I do want to emphasize that I never spoke with Teal about possible employment while he was my client and before I left ReachLink. I did not encourage him to apply for employment at Bio Del Sol while he was my client. Teal's claims that I told him to do so simply are just not true. Our client-therapist relationship ended in April 2022. After that and my departure from ReachLink, I do not know how TO determined there was a possible employment opportunity at Bio Del Sol. I did not know of his plans to submit an application for employment at Bio Del Sol. Nonetheless, this does not change my regret for not having informed Bio Del Sol of a former client-therapist relationship from the outset. Had I done this one simple thing, the entire situation likely would have been avoided. I have wholeheartedly learned from this, and it will never happen again. It is a one-time lapse in professional judgment, and I accept full responsibility for it. I ask for leniency from the board, and again, want to reiterate that the lessons I have learned from this experience have brought on benefits and much, much stress. It has forever imprinted upon me the importance of ensuring I avoid even any appearance of dual or multiple relationships in the future with clients or former clients. Thank you for the opportunity to make this statement.
I want to just take a few minutes because I'm the lawyer. I have to
tell you what our legal position is, which I understand that Ms. Zavala disagrees with, but I believe it's correct. I believe the law I cited in the supplement shows that it's correct. If the Arizona legislature takes the time and the effort, based upon consultation with this board and behavioral health professionals, to specifically limit something more than what the ethical rule states, and it's the exact area, then the Arizona legislature, the statute, as was said earlier in another matter, controls. And so what did the Arizona legislature, in consultation with this board, draft for dual relationships? It specifically limited the subsection Y to only clients and to only simultaneous relationships. Now, as stated, in Arizona, it's presumed that the legislature understands and knows about the law, ethical sections like 1.06C. And I cite that case, the Garcia case. So the Supreme Court said that it's presumed that if the legislature limits something, that it doesn't intend to allow other outsider organizations to circumvent that. And that is our position, that frankly the statute controls and limits this to only clients and to only simultaneous relationships. It's clear that that's not the case here. Now, you heard Mr. Bustos say he understands, and irrespective of the language that the legislature used, he would never do this again. This was a one-time lapse in judgment. And so, you know, as the lawyer, if I was arguing in court, I would say, well, this kind of mandates a dismissal. But the bottom line is, with respect to what Mr. Bustos said, we do agree that a non-disciplinary consent letter would be appropriate in this case, and we are totally willing to accept that. You have my client's assurances that this will never happen again. And it is a odd situation that likely never will arise again, but even if it does, it will be treated, as Mr. Bustos said, far, far differently. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bustos.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. Does anybody have any questions for the licensee or his attorney?
May I add something? I just want to be clear with the board members. You have the legal authority to find this violation if you choose to do so. As I mentioned, an NDCA may be appropriate, but I don't want you to be persuaded that you would not be able to find this violation. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Rama. So this concludes the evidential portion of the meeting. As a reminder, this is the time for the board to deliberate, and we ask that you do not interrupt during this time. And leading this?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle. I know it's mine. I just want to be completely transparent and say that I've gone back and forth on this one quite a bit. And the reason for that is that, you know, I always kind of look at intent. And I want to go on record and say, as I don't believe Mr. Bustos had any malintent here. I think that he had good intentions. In fact, I think that the rationale he gave regarding peer support and putting him in this type of role to grow in the recovery, I think, is commendable, to be honest. With that being said, is that obviously the power differential that exists in a therapeutic relationship is going to transfer, right, into a professional relationship. And so I think that's kind of where I was kind of stuck. I said, okay, so, you know, what risk, because that's the wording, what risk of exploitation was in place when that working relationship was created? But that being said, though, is again, I appreciate Ms. Russo's acknowledgement that this was a lapse in judgment, right? This was a lapse in judgment. He thought he was doing the right thing, and he admits that he would never do this again. And it is a unique situation, to be put in. So, kind of with all that being said, I have an idea what I'd like to do, but any thoughts from my peers before I make a motion?
I want to agree with you as far as the power differential, and when we're looking at this as a whole, we really have to look at that across the board. And the potential for someone in the same situation to take advantage of that power differential exists. I don't think that's what happened in this situation. I want to be clear on that. But I do think that exists globally, and part of our role in protecting people and the public is to be very clear that we cannot put people in a position to have that power differential, right, and possibly take advantage of it. So, that's really all I have to say.
Thank you. I kind of struggle with it too, like Mr. Shen did, because I see that there was good intention versus I didn't know what I was doing. So that was kind of like my struggle. So I just wanted to share that.
And I just want to talk about what the rule says, because I think it's important. I think it's very clear that the ethical rules are especially rules having to do with clients' health and safety, are rules that get adopted by K, which is the way we've always interpreted it, and it seems to be the plain language of the rule. And so because of that, there's no question to me that dual relationship is a health and safety ethical rule. Mm-hmm. And so I hear what you guys are saying on the facts, but from a legal perspective, I really do think, you know, traditionally what we have done is found for violations in situations like these, but I defer to the clinicians.
Well, Ms. Kramer, I'll add to that, and I appreciate the open window for, I mean, we aren't attorneys, and I do not want to claim to be one, but when I look at the even language, so as a clinician, when I see the language that even says licensee simultaneously engages in both a professional and a non-professional, I'm still a professional as the past therapist. I'm also still a professional as that person might seek me out again. So even that language as a clinician, from my viewpoint, seems that just because I'm not seeing that client anymore, my professional position has not been diminished or removed.
Yeah.
And so then I think it parallels nicely with the code of ethics, you know, that passed in, you know, former clients, because we are still in that professional role of the professional service that we delivered. It doesn't go away just because the client has decided not to come in.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Mr. Shen, are you ready to make a motion?
I think so. So I actually would recommend that we dismiss it.
Those in favor?
I think I would like just an ethics education. I think just education would be. I'd be comfortable with that.
I was gonna do an NDA, but I have to find for the.
No. So for the non-disciplinary, it's either a straight out dismissal, or it's a dismissal with a letter of concern, or it's a dismissal with a non-disciplinary consent agreement. And if you're wanting to want education, then it would be the NDCA. Okay. And we would not sign the violation.
Gotcha. Okay. Because I was going to dismiss and then ask for the disciplinary. Sorry. But then, I was doing that right, I think, right?
Okay.
So anyway, okay. Do you want to go back and make the motion?
Do I?
No, I was just discussing that. I'd be comfortable with that.
Oh, okay. Okay,
you're not taking over, Mark.
Okay. Let me try this again. So, I recommend that we dismiss the complaint and offer a non-disciplinary consent agreement with education.
Plus, your second. Could we hold on 1 second? So, we typically just say we'll offer a non-disciplinary consent agreement. Administratively, we'll dismiss it, but that's okay. But we need to know what kind of education you would like him to complete.
Yeah, so I would like to say education, and this can be two different trainings, unless you guys think this is all part of one. But obviously, learning more about dual and multiple relationships would be key, along with just the importance of identifying, you know, how to maintain therapeutic boundaries with clients, whether it's current clients or former clients. So I wasn't sure if you guys thought there'd be two separate trainings or all in one. Thoughts on that?
Don't we usually find those like in one training?
The boundary should be covered if they're talking about the relationships. The boundary part should be covered.
I think in light of giving an NDCA, I think both of them covered would feel nice that we have covered all areas to move forward and not have this happen, you know, no other unique situations happen, hopefully. That's just my, you know, just because it is an NDCA, that going light on education doesn't
work. You could consider doing six CEUs, dual and multiple relationships and therapeutic boundaries, possibly find them all in 1-6 or two separate threes.
So moved. That's my motion.
Ms. Sabalo, do you read that?
We'll be offering the licensee a consent agreement for 12 months. He would be required to take six CEUs that related to dual and multiple relationships and therapeutic boundaries. If not signed, invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remanded to a formal hearing.
So moved.
Palacios, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Will you do roll call?
No.
Okay. So this concludes this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. We are going to go to agenda item 7H, Mr. Rizzo, and I believe counsel can be on the phone. Is that correct?
I believe both the counsel and the licensee will be on the phone together, but they'll be here. But we'll just check with him. Maybe he won't be.
Good morning. Is Mr. Butner and Mr. Rizzo on the line?
Yes, Dr. Russo and Josh Butner are here. Thank you.
Great. My name is Patricia Delbreth. I'm the board's chairperson. And since you're participating via phone, just a reminder, this is a public meeting. So there are members of the public here, and it is being recorded. And I'm joined by my fellow board members and board staff. And we just called this matter. We will hear briefly from board staff, and then it would be your opportunity to address the board for up to 5 minutes at that point.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Lowe?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, this matter is coming before you today to consider whether or not you would allow Dr. Blackwell to provide a supplement to the psychosexual evaluation that he did on Mr. Russo. At our 1/13/23 board meeting, the board members unanimously voted to vote on a violation, and based on that violation, you issued an order for a psychosexual evaluation of Mr. Russo. Board staff, once that is ordered, Mr. Russo has an opportunity to submit an evaluator for review, and if approved, then what happens is board staff will let him know that it's been approved. In addition to that, board staff will provide the entire investigative record to the evaluator so that they can use that record that we've collected as a tool to determine what types of tests and measures that they need to conduct during this evaluation, as well as being aware of what our board members had concerns with. With that being said, board staff did receive the evaluation, and in review of the evaluation, there was not one mention of the board or the concerns of the board, and based on that, it was very unusual for me to have seen something like that, so I instructed board staff to reach out to Dr. Blackwell to ask him, you know, if he read the investigative materials, and not a direct quote, but basically I saw the email, I saw the information, but no, I didn't, but I would be happy to do an addendum, and that just felt very uncomfortable to me, so I wanted to bring it back to the board to determine whether you want to allow this current evaluator to do an addendum, or if you feel that it's possible that the evaluation should be voided and you should be getting evaluated from somebody else. And that's all I have, unless you have questions for me.
Questions from board members?
I have a question, Ms. Zavala. Is it, I just want to verify that it's common practice that we send, when we order an evaluation, that we send what the issues are and what the concerns are so that the evaluator is well aware of why the mandate, you know, why the recommendation for the evaluation is happening.
It is. It's definitely part of our process, and not only part of our process, but we first reach out and make sure that it's a confidential way of submitting documents through an email, and once they do that, we send, again, they get the entire investigative record so that they can use it.
Thank you.
I have a question. How does the board identify those people?
So what happens is once an order is issued, it's up to the licensee to find that individual, and then they have to submit the CV of the evaluator to board staff, which then gets looked at from the board designee over that particular discipline for approval.
Thank you.
I have a question. So the evaluator gets notified by the board that they can move forward with the assessment, and at that time the documents are sent?
Yes, so actually what it really looks like is that we notify the licensee, and in this case the attorney, that this individual is approved, and then we contact the person that's approved, letting them know that they can will proceed, and we provide them with the entire investigative record.
Okay, so the notice of you can proceed and the documents go at the same time?
Correct.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Sabella? All right, Mr. Butner and the licensee, this would be your opportunity to address the board. You have up to 5 minutes collectively to do so.
Thank you. First, I'd just like to mention that I think we may have discovered possibly what happened with regards to some confusion based on the board sending the documents that contain their concerns and the report. And I think on the same day, Dr. Russo had sent all the information that he had up to that point. He did not have the report, of course. And so when Dr. Blackwell indicated that he received the document, I think he might have been referring to what Dr. Russo had just sent him. So that might help with explaining how, you know, there was some confusion because we, when we talked to Dr. Blackwell after this, or when Dr. Russo did, he indicated that he had not received the report, so we were confused as to, you know, how that could be. But anyway, I just want to point out that I just want to indicate that, you know, it was a rather significant expense for Dr. Russo. It was about $2,500 for this evaluation, and so our position would be we would hope and request that the board would approve just allowing Dr. Blackwood to provide the addendum. He has a very strong CV. I think he's one of the best in the state at this type of thing. And I think he's willing to do so. And at this point, he probably has a lot of good information about Dr. Russo that would, you know, allow him to provide an even more comprehensive report based on, or evaluation based on the report and the information he's already gathered. So that's our position with regards to the addendum. And also, I'd just like to point out that it was quite difficult to get this one scheduled. I don't know, Dr. Russo, we went through four different doctors just to try to get somebody lined up and then get approved by the board. So it's not the easiest thing to do. So that's another reason why we're hoping, you know, we just don't want to make it so onerous on Dr. Russo. And we want to get a response back to the board as quickly as possible. And so that's really what we wanted to point out with regards to Dr. Blackwood's addendum and our request to allow that to go forward. And then, if I could, just a couple of things. Assuming that we get another evaluation, including Dr. Blackwood's addendum, I would just request that the board take a look at that. And a couple of things we'd like the board to consider at this point, and this is going beyond kind of today's hearing.
I'm going to have to interrupt you, Mr. Butner. As you know, it's only on the agenda to consider the psychological evaluation if we'll accept an addendum, so I can't let you speak to the contents of it.
Okay, and then I won't. and maybe we'll have an opportunity to do that at a later date. So with regards to the addendum then, you know, it's our position and our desire to have Dr. Blackwood be able to incorporate that. I don't think just because he's done a psychological evaluation of Dr. Russo prior to receiving the report, I don't think that would invalidate his capability to conduct a more thorough review of all the documents now, and report, you know, honestly and openly and professionally about what he just was able to be exposed to. And also, he did respond, Dr. Blackwood did, that psychological evaluation really used tests designed to evaluate the subject, irrelevant of what the outside influences are, if you will. So I think all of those are still valid. And then if there's something appropriate in addition to, based on him receiving the report, I'm sure he would acknowledge that. And I think he explained that fairly well in his email, but yeah, better than that. Dr. Russo, is there anything else that we need to address? And that's okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I think that's it. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on that.
Great. Thank you both. Do board members have any questions? No questions? All right. This is our time to talk amongst ourselves, so we ask that you not interrupt. And Dr. Bailey, I believe you're leading this deliberation.
It appears, I mean, when I look at the when I look at the mandate for an evaluation, the evaluator would need to know why this is coming before them. This isn't, you know, why is this person requesting this? What kind of battery of assessments do I need to organize? I don't want to claim to know what that should be, but I would imagine that would go into the decision making of what should I use here to fully assess, you know, the client coming in. The feedback that I feel like we read through the investigation alludes to batteries of tests that were predominantly heavy on cognitive decline. And that I don't feel that represents, the feedback of, you know, what was being talked about as far as the outcomes of these tests don't feel like they're incongruent with what our concerns were. The one area, the Omni 4 was used, that is a test that would evaluate personality traits. That feels like it was a very small component of the assessment. The other piece of that's the interview. And if we're not informed fully of what questions to ask in a verbal interview, then the interview would not be thorough. I would imagine it would not be thorough. And so it feels like we've had an assessment that is based on one pathway that does not feel congruent with what we needed results on. And then to go back and just say, well, I'll add some language around things I found. We would have had the language already. So where's that language going to come from? We're not going to be able to re-interview differently. We have a bias already from the report here. It just does not appear that the evaluation was done in accordance to what we were hoping, what we needed. I can appreciate that the test is expensive, and my first thought is, if I'm spending $2,500 to get something assessed, I'm going to be very transparent on what I need done and what the issues are and what's before me as far as, you know, proving, you know, for or against, or, you know, having findings on. I would have gone in hoping to get exactly what I needed for what I was investing in the evaluation. That does not appear to happen either. It feels to be a little bit dismissed. The content value of what the issues were feel to be, you know, kind of underplayed. That's the word I was looking. So I don't feel that this evaluation is indicative of any of the findings that would help us, even in a positive way, for the licensees. So I'm hoping, you know, even that maybe a better evaluation might help determine this case better.
Go ahead.
Well, and I just want to say I have a problem with, if we're the ones asking for the evaluation, I have a problem with someone who doesn't take the time to see why we're asking for it. He read what the client had, but he didn't take the time to read ours because he thought it would be just the same. It just doesn't seem very professional to me.
Agree. And I just, to piggyback on both of those, is, you know, part of this is credibility and accountability. And so if you don't have that external information and you're writing to what, you know, the licensee told you about the complaints, you don't have the ability to assess that credibility and accountability that also goes with the evaluation. And in terms of doing the addendum after the fact, you know,
to Dr. Bailey's point, these are supposed to be objective and neutral. And so not only has Dr. Blackwood sat with the licensee and done the evaluation, you know, but counsel mentions that licensee followed up with him to further inquire, so they've had additional contact. And so I just don't think it would be appropriate either. Ms. Zavala, did you have something to add?
I have two things. First, I just wanted to, in regards to what the attorney had said about Mr. Blackwell, whether he got the report or not, we did confirm that it was sent to him. And then secondly, if you, and I apologize, you don't have a copy of it, but I'm looking at a copy of it. The copy of the evaluation says, respondent shall provide a copy of this interim order to the licensed psychologist and shall sign a consent form to release the report and all confidential evaluation notes and or records of the board. The evaluation report should, among other things, so I think it's kind of clear in there there's information that should have been provided. But regardless of that, I just wanted to be clear that I think that Mr. Carver's not here, but I feel comfortable speaking on his behalf that he was very clear with this process, not only with the evaluator, but with Mr. Russo and his attorney of what this looks like.
Thank you. Dr. Bailey, do you want to make a motion?
I do. Exactly sure the language. I move that we reissue. I don't know if that would be order a new evaluation.
From a different
provider. Yeah.
Maybe instead of issuing a new one, we could place an extension on this one.
Sure.
To be completed by another
evaluator approved by the board.
Is there a second?
Nat, second.
Do we need a roll call for that?
Yes.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey?
Aye.
Mary Coonrod?
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz?
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan?
Aye.
Holly Knapp?
Aye.
Megan Kramer?
Aye.
Adelaisa Meek?
Aye.
Diane Palacios?
Aye.
Mark Shin?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Butner. Thank you, Dr. Russo, for being available via phone. This will conclude this matter.
Thank you.
And we are going to lose everybody. Good, or we do?
Goodbye.
Anybody need a break, or are we good?
Yes.
So, good. You want a break? Okay. Let's take a quick break. It's 10:49. Let's take 6 minutes. We'll be back at 10:55. All right. We are back on the record. It is 10:55. I'll be recusing from the next two matters, Jessica Lewis and Marlena Gonzalez-Cabaldon, and handing it over to Ms. Meek. First going to 7F, Ms. Lewis. I believe the complainant's going to be on the phone, is that correct? All right, and then Ms. Carvis and client. And I will be handing this over to Ms. Meek.
So we're on Ms. Lewis.
Thank you. So we're going to start by asking board staff to give us a summary of the case, please.
Can we just double check that the complainant is on and can hear us?
Is the complainant on? Can you hear us?
Oh, okay, good. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violations. ARS 32-3251, 16J, engaging in conduct the board determines as gross negligence or repeated negligence in the licensee's profession, as well as ARS 32-3251, 16CII, making any oral or written misrepresentation of a fact in any statements provided during the investigation or disciplinary proceeding by the board, and ARS 32-3251-16II, violating any federal or state law, rule, or regulation applicable to the practice of behavioral health as it relates to R46-210 and R46-211. Since 4/21, licensee has been licensed as an LAMFT with the board. Pursuant to AAC R46-211, an associate-level licensee needs pre-approval from the board in order to engage in the independent practice of behavioral health. From 10:22 to 2:23, complainant was providing some sort of supervision to licensee regarding confidential consultation over the supportive services licensee was providing to students at agency, which was not psychotherapy. On 2:10:23, during one of their meetings, licensee informed complainant that she's been seeing clients through a private practice for over a year and never disclosed this to complainant prior to this date. In 4:21, almost immediately after receiving her LAMFT license with the board, licensee began providing psychotherapy services through private practice without board approval or any sort of supervision in place. In a 10:31:22 documented supervision session between licensee and complainant, licensee disclosed wanting to open a private practice. It is concerning that at the time of this discussion, licensee had already been actively running an unlawful practice for at least 18 months at that time. From 4:21 to 2:23, licensee was concealing from complainant that she was actively engaging in unlawful practice through private practice without board approval. Licensee had seen at least 223 clients through private practice from 4:21 to 2:23. Board staff requested additional information in regards to all sessions conducted and monies collected through private practice. The response outlined over 1,200 client sessions and roughly over $100,000 collected from services licensee provided at private practice. On 3/26/20, licensee emailed supervisor stating she needed an AAMFT approved supervisor in order to fulfill her hours in a private practice setting, indicating licensee in fact knew she needed a supervisor before opening a private practice. Furthermore, on 6/2/21, licensee emailed supervisor forms indicating there were supervision forms that licensee needed to send to the board and asked supervisor to sign in return so licensee could submit. When an associate level licensee obtains their license, board staff sends them a document that specifically lays out as an associate level licensee they are required to practice under direct supervision pursuant to AAC R46211. Licensee represents that from 9:20 to 8:21, supervisor provided supervision. Records from supervisor, however, indicate the supervision was from 8:20 to 5:21. Regardless of whether the supervisor supervised licensee from 4:21 to 8:21, it would still indicate licensee practiced unlawfully without any sort of supervision from 8:21 to 2:23 in private practice. Furthermore, there is no legally binding contract signed and dated in place between licensee and supervisor. Licensee represented the following during the investigative interview. Licensee thought she could get into practice if she had private practice if she had a supervisor, as long as the supervisor came to the practice. Once supervisor stopped supervising her, licensee knew she was practicing unlawfully. Licensee continued private practice because she was trying to find another supervisor and it was not intentional to continue private practice. Licensee admits she did not contact the board due to fear that she was practicing unlawfully. Licensee thought supervisor was going to fill out the appropriate forms and submit them to the board. Licensee believes had the board complaint not been filed, she would still be running a private practice. Licensee purposely did not tell complainant about private practice. Licensee provided the following contradictory misrepresentations during the board's investigation. Despite licensee representing during the interview that she thought supervisor would complete the appropriate forms for the board and submit them, licensee clearly emailed supervisor asking her to complete the forms so licensee herself could submit the forms to the board. Licensee represented she thought as long as she had a supervisor she could go into private practice, yet she submitted the pre-approval supervision forms to supervisor, indicating licensee knew she needed these completed and sent to the board, showing licensee knew she needed to complete a pre-approval from the board. Licensee represented in her written response that she thought she had 60 days from the termination of the supervision agreement to cease her practice, yet continued to engage in unlawful practice for over a year. On 2/6/23, licensee emailed board staff that she had a private practice for a few months in 2021, but referred clients out after supervisor ceased supervision. Licensee further misrepresented to her clients by notifying them via email that there was an issue with her license renewal and had to stop seeing clients at this time, which is completely untruthful. It is highly concerning that immediately after obtaining licensee licensure with the board, licensee began private practice without board approval. It is more concerning that the licensee acknowledged knowing she could not be in private practice setting without supervision, yet continued in private practice seeing hundreds of clients over a two-year period without any sort of supervision. Licensee has displayed a complete lack of insight or regard for board rules and regulations by intentionally continuing her unlawful practice for almost 2 years. In
addition, following the investigative record, it appears the violation of ARS 3232516P, failing to conform to minimum practice standards as developed by the board as it relates to the following: consent for treatment, treatment plan, client record, and telepractice. This recommendation is based on the following: licensee informed consent templates failed to include four of the required elements. Despite the templates failing to include certain elements, the randomly subpoenaed clinical records board staff obtained only failed to include the following minimum board requirements within the informed consent: general procedures to be used in treatment, client's right to participate in treatment, and the telehealth requirements. Licensee's treatment plan failed to include five of the required elements. Licensee's treatment plan failed to include four of the required requirements. Licensee's progress notes failed to include four of the required. Even though licensee's progress notes template failed to include these minimum requirements, the randomly subpoenaed clinical records failed to include three of the telehealth requirements. It's highly concerning that within the first month, licensee obtains her LMFT license. She goes into private practice unlawfully and has these documentation issues. A supervisor could have possibly assisted licensee with developing practice forms that meet all board requirements. In addition to a review of the record, it also appears as a violation of ARS 3232516II, violating any federal or state law, rule, or regulation applicable to the practice of behavioral health as it relates to AAC R46205 change of contact information. This recommendation is based on the following: pursuant to the board's rules, licensee is required to update any change of employment within 30 days of that change. Licensee failed to ever update her employment or notify the board of her employment through private practice. Furthermore, during an investigative interview, licensee acknowledged knowing about the board's rule regarding updating her employment and did not have an answer as to why she never updated her employment with the board. It appears licensee deliberately did not update her employment with the board to conceal her unlawful practice. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you, Ms. Alana. Does anybody from the board have any questions? Okay. Okay, Ms. Amy Owen, we would like to give you the opportunity to make your statement and respond to the investigator summary. You have up to 8 minutes.
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing you. I apologize.
Yes, that's okay. You have up to 8 minutes to address the board in response to the summary that we just presented.
No, I don't have any questions.
Okay, thank you. So, Ms. Lewis and Ms. Garvis, you now have 8 minutes to address the board.
Yes, thank you. I will keep my comments brief and allow Ms. Lewis to address some questions that the members of the board may have. She understands the very serious nature of what occurred, what she did. She has taken ownership of that. She knows it was not in any way, shape, or form appropriate behavior. I think she would tell you herself, and will tell you herself if asked, that she did this from, I think, a good place in terms of wanting to help people in an underserved area or population, and I think she hoped that she would find another supervisor within the time frame and did not, and I think it was just one of those situations that snowballed and got out of control very quickly, and she got into a place where she didn't really know how to walk it back. She understands that it is quite possible that this board will act very harshly with the facts that are before them today. She would do anything that this board would require of her in order to be able to maintain a license. She understands that this board may choose to restrict her ability from a private practice, even in supervision, for an extremely long period of time, and she would certainly accept that, as well as continuing education, and ethics, business practices, whatever this board would ask or require of her. And she wanted to come here and face you in person today, just because she understands the serious nature of that, and it's not an easy thing to do, to come and face the board of your peers when you're here for allegations like this. But she understands that it was important for her to come here and answer for her actions, and that's what she's here to do today. She knows that some of you will probably have some very difficult questions for her. her, and she is going to answer those questions to the best of her ability. She has completed the school year with her employment at the Kingman Academy of Learning. She has the opportunity to return there in that capacity next year. They're aware of this board complaint, and whether or not she is licensed may depend on whether or not she can stay in that same role or would have to transition to something else. But we appreciate the opportunity to be heard. She acknowledges the mistake and would, again, seek any opportunity whatsoever to be able to maintain licensure. And Ms. Lewis is here and happy to address your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I thought you were going to have a statement. Does anybody from the board have any questions for Ms. Lewis or Ms. Carvis?
I'll get started, Ms. Lewis. I guess my first question I'd like to ask is, how are you working toward obtaining hours toward licensure? Like, in your mind, how are you doing that then?
When I first started, I was working on an Indian reservation, and that's how I got started working towards my hours and my supervision. My supervisor was an LPC, and that's how I got started. And then the pandemic hit, and the world shut down. And they politely told us counselors that they were going to lay off, and that white people were going to be the first ones to be laid off, so I started looking for another place. So that's how I was earning my hours.
How are you, like now, like during this process, mm-hmm. how were you thinking you were going to be able to start to work toward licensure? You already knew the process, you needed a supervisor, but how is that going to happen in this situation you created?
My position that I have now at the school, it's clearly, it's for mental health, it's not meant for long term. So I work at the academy, and I work with students from kindergarten all the way up to 12th grade. And so in that, I will see individuals one-on-one, and sometimes the parents will contact me and want me to sit with them so that way they can communicate with their child about any concerns. And if there's anything that's long-term that is needed, then I...
Okay, so no therapy, and I think I read that. No psychotherapy is happening in the schools. So we're
correct, yeah.
Not obtaining hours to work. So how did you think you were working? We go into supervised private practice working toward licensure. Like, that's the goal. How were you thinking you were going to obtain your hours toward licensure with the situation you created?
I thought that when a student is coming in, when they're having issues at home with the family dynamic, I thought that would be considered hours that was for the marriage and family therapy.
And so in your mind, you were going to supervise those cases with your supervisor at your school, and nothing in your private practice was ever going to count toward licensure because we weren't under any supervision.
Yes.
That was the situation.
Yes.
So potentially, since we weren't going to necessarily, you had said, you know, we might not have ever gotten a supervisor, so we might have potentially worked in private practice for the duration and never reaching any, obtaining any hours toward supervision because there's no supervisor.
I tried continuously. I still did up until I got the complaint. To find a supervisor that would be willing to supervise me.
Okay. And what was your thoughts? You made a comment that you needed an AMFT-approved supervisor. What made you think you needed that?
Because the 100 hours that is needed for supervision, 50 of the hours was with, say, the LPC, who was my supervisor on the reservation.
Right.
So then the other 50 hours would be through a marriage and family therapist.
Which could just be an LMFT that is approved by the state. It doesn't have to be an approved AMFT-approved supervisor.
and that's listed in the rules. It just needs to be an LMFT that's approved supervisor. So when I see that you're required, you're looking for an AMFT approved, yes, that population is quite small, and I get that, but that isn't even what was required. I just wanted to clarify another piece. You mentioned that you purposely removed yourself from like Psychology Today, you know, other platforms, and didn't think about ZenCare. And yeah, but ZenCare is a monthly subscription to be on that platform for referrals, so I'm kind of concerned on how you did not remember that you were part of that.
They charged me for an entire year, so I wasn't in a monthly. And that, yeah, and
because I wasn't in a monthly
statement, I thought all about it.
And then I think I just wanted to clarify, so we're working as an associate, and part of the rules for working as an associate is that we notify our clients that we're under supervision. So how did you handle that piece with all of your clients coming in to understand your licensure?
The website, I'm under supervision, and then when they would ask me, I would let them know that I'm not fully licensed. And they would come in and let them know that there would be a supervisor that would either want them to be alone, like to see, provide the therapy, to let them know.
Okay.
How I'm telling that I was not licensed.
Okay, so in your informed consent, then we have no way for a client, which is a requirement, to one, know that you're under supervision, and then two, how to contact the supervisor should they have any questions or concerns.
Then I failed that part.
Okay. Okay. I appreciate that.
Anybody else has any questions? For the licensee? Thank you. And I failed to ask if any board members have any questions for the complainant. Okay. Thank you. So this concludes the evidential portion of the meeting. As a reminder, this is a time for the board to deliberate, and we ask that you do not interrupt during this time.
I do. I'll lead the discussion. I think it's no surprise I'm pretty passionate about this piece, so I absolutely welcome feedback and discussion. So I just want to really open with that. I think I had more compassion for a very short amount of time that we were not abiding by the rules. This feels like, or I'm reading, from the material, it feels like there's a huge intention to defy the rules. I mean, we're not working toward licensure. We're not notifying our clients that we're under supervision. This is part of being at that associate level. There's nothing in place to really help clients understand what they're getting into. So there's no informed consent. So if we look at that piece missing means clients are very unaware of what they're walking into. The amount of time is significant. There's a significant amount of time not abiding by the rules and not making any changes. And then we had a supervisor. So this is a little different too, right? We tend to have a lot of compassion for it. I didn't know. But we're reading rules, but we're not reading them necessarily correctly. We know we had a supervisor before and that didn't work out. So then we didn't find another supervisor, yet we continue to work. And then in the capacity that we do have a supervisor, we're not even getting psychotherapy or working toward licensure. So what was going to happen is concerning to me. Were we going to do this for the next 5 years? What would happen if we ever found a supervisor? What would that supervisor be walking into? They'd be walking into this. So we really could potentially never get a supervisor at this point. Yet we also keep practicing. And we keep practicing a lot. I mean, I was reading there were upwards to 60 hours sometimes a week working. You know, so this isn't necessarily like 5 clients that I just kind of kept and couldn't abandon. That might be a different presentation for me. This is I'm working and I'm having a practice. there are supervisors out there, so I'm a little bit concerned, and I don't want to get into saying this didn't happen, but looking for a supervisor's out there. I just know it's also kind of costly. So, you know, we have to come up to a site. I know supervisors drive hours to go for that 60, you know, and that's part of the process. And I appreciate that we wanted to work in an underserved, you know, area, and it's hard to find people, but there are a lot of people having supervisors travel across the valley to give them good supervision and to monitor their practice and get them in a position of success. And then lastly, I say we weren't in a position of success. We had tons of deficiencies because there was no oversight at all to get this started. And I don't know what that could have lent into. I have no idea what the therapy looked like. We have no live review, which is what the supervisor also does. So 2 years almost with no live review at all. So I am super concerned that I don't know what has happened, and that doesn't feel like we have protected the public in this process, and I don't necessarily feel comfortable moving forward allowing this person to practice.
I have a request, if it's appropriate, for an executive meeting.
Executive session?
Mm-hmm.
For legal advice?
Yes.
And to the confidential office.
Okay.
And review confidential records?
Yes, and review confidential records.
I second that motion.
It is 11:18, and we're going to break. So the board is back in session at 11:28 a.m. Ms. Bailey, you want to continue?
Oh,
thank you.
So I know I probably wrapped up, you know, most of my concerns before we went into executive session. If there's any other comments or discussion,
I just want to add, I agree with what you said. My concern, we're in an underserved population. You are very intentional about what you're doing. And I think the comment in the report said, if this complaint had not come up, you would still be practicing. And you're practicing doing harm to a population that's already underserved and marginalized. And so that is very concerning to me, that even today, if we weren't here, she'd still be out practicing with all these deficiencies, which can lead to doing more harm because there's no treatment plan, no consent, all the stuff that we talked about.
Something else I noticed as well is in one of the documents, and I don't know if the board has jurisdiction over this, but Venmo and Zelle may be accepted, and I feel like that's a HIPAA violation, and so that's an area of concern. I'm just wanting to put that on record for anybody practicing to ensure that payment options are taken by a secure method, not Venmo or Zelle.
Yeah, and I support everything that you said, Dr. P. So I'm going to move that we do find for the violations. Of unlawful practice, ARS 3232-5116-J and 16C-II, as well as violating the federal and state law applicable to the practice of behavioral health, 3232-5116-II, as it relates to practice limitations, R46210, and direct supervision and supervised work experience, R46211, as well as document deficiencies, 3232-5116-P, as it relates to R461101, 1102, 1103, and 1106, as well as violating our board rules, ARS 3232-5116-II, as it relates to R46205, change of contact of information.
Nap, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And recommendations?
Is there any opposed?
Oh, any opposed? I'm sorry.
Okay.
Motion passed.
I'll entertain some feedback. I am of the position of revoking the license, asking for the surrender of the license. It's in every single area is a misstep for clients, and I don't see the recovery of the intention that went in front of this case, in front of this situation. But I'm open to hearing anybody else who has another thought.
My concern is that the behavior went on after there was awareness and admitted awareness, and that happened on more than one occasion throughout the evidence that was presented to us.
Yeah, I'm really looking for when people have, especially the most serious violations, some acknowledgement that, you know, or an indication that they didn't know that what they were doing was wrong. And here, I don't see that. I don't see any evidence that would have stopped independent of this. And it's
I'll also say I think it serves a disservice to supervise private practice as well. And, you know, there's a lot of rules, and a lot of clinicians are doing a really good job around that, and this is not. And that it was intentional. So that just sits really poorly with me, even in support of all the clinicians doing supervised private practice. And I'm going to move then that we ask for the voluntary surrender of the licensee's license.
Second. Kramer.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Roll call.
Roll call.
Kimberly Bailey?
Aye.
Mary Coonrod?
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan?
Aye.
Holly Knapp?
Aye.
Megan Kramer?
Aye.
Adelisa Meek?
Aye.
Diane Palacios?
Aye.
Mark Shen?
Aye.
And if we can add to that motion, if not, sign the mayor to a formal hearing.
So that concludes our case.
Thank you.
Adelisa.
What?
I can't hear.
She's doing the next one.
I recuse from the next two.
We're breaking for lunch.
Oh, we are?
Yeah.
So Ms. Owen, you're still on the phone?
Sorry, Penny.
We are done, and just thank you for participating.
All right. We're going to break for lunch. It's 11:34. Let's come back at...
Everybody good with 25 minutes?
Come back at noon?
We'll be back at noon.
Mic's on. Mic's on. All right, good afternoon. We are back in session and on the record. It is 12:04, and we are going to go to agenda item 7E, Marlena Gonzalez-Cabalda. And again, I have to recuse, and Dr. Hennigan needs to recuse as well, and Ms. Meek will be taking this case over. Thank you. Is the complainant present on the phone? You may come forward, please. So we're going to get started by getting a summary of the case from board staff.
Madam Chair, members of the board, upon a review of the investigative record, there does not appear to be clear and convincing evidence to support the complainant's allegations. However, following a review of the investigative record, there does appear to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16M, engaging or offering to engage as a licensee in activity that are not congruent with the licensee's professional education, training, or experience. This recommendation is based on the following. Since 3 of 18, licensee has been operating a private practice. Due to concerns and allegations around licensees' billing practices, board staff obtained licensees' informed consent documents to verify billing and fee information within her informed consents. Licensees' informed consent included the following in part. Licensee will bill in 15-minute increments for additional requests not billable to insurance, such as writing letters, completing forms, consultations with other health professionals, or other paperwork. Based on this information and following board staff investigative interview, board staff requested licensee provide examples of such letters or paperwork she has completed for clients, and licensee provided four examples in which two of them appeared appropriate. On 12-8-20, licensee wrote a letter supporting a client's utilization of FMLA at their current place of employment due to their symptoms of being triggered and exacerbated at work. On 12-8-20, licensee completed a certification of health care provider for employee's serious health condition under the Family and Medical Leave Act document for the same client, which included the following. Licensee lists her name and LPC credential. Due to the condition, the client is expected to be incapacitated for more than 3 consecutive full calendar days from 12-11-20 to 3-10-21. Licensee listed 8 dates of service she saw a client. Current symptoms are being triggered or exacerbated at work. Due to the condition, the client will be referred to other health care providers for evaluation or treatment. Due to the condition, the client cannot perform the essential job functions because of difficulty concentrating and feeling overwhelmed. In a 5-11-23 email to board staff, licensee indicates she writes letters if they are related to confirming that his client is participating in service or to support a client's request to use their FMLA benefit due to behavioral health issues. Licensee represents the language within her own form consent, offering to write letters or complete forms that have been in her informed consent since 2018. Licensee further represented completing FMLA paperwork for at least 4 clients at the private practice. Licensee denied writing any letters for ESA or disability. Despite licensee denying writing any disability letters, she's inappropriately completed FMLA paperwork for a client indicating the client was incapacitated, therefore disabling the client. Board rules and statutes do not indicate that a licensee counselor has the ability to disable a person. It is highly concerning that the licensee extended her boundaries of competence by completing FMLA paperwork temporarily disabling a client, while as a licensed therapist, she is supposed to treat, diagnose, and evaluate clients. And that's all I have unless you have questions for me, but just a reminder to the board members, there was a supplement submitted by the licensee that was uploaded to the member portal in regards to her filling out the FMLA paperwork.
Do any board members have any questions for Ms. Zavala? Okay. Ms. Kayla Burr, I would like to give you 5 minutes to respond.
So I just want to go on record to say, in most cases, I think the board's position regarding the No Surprises law encompasses how little clinicians who are practicing within compliance are actually affected by the law. And by the information I've gathered, which I'm open to education around if I'm misinterpreting, I think the position kind of missed a loophole that could be determined to be a way that clients can be harmed. And while at this point I don't disagree regarding that there's not conclusive evidence to that, I do think the way it needs to be known that the way this person has behaved as a supervisor is inappropriate, and I would not encourage this to be repeated with another supervisor.
Does any board member have questions? No questions? And is the licensee on the phone or present? Thank you. You may come forward. If you could please turn your phone, your microphone up. Thank you. So, Ms. Gonzalez-Gabaldon, we would like you to give an opportunity to you to address the board or state, share your statement. You have up to 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for giving me this opportunity to hear me out related to these allegations and to the complainant's concerns. I've been licensed with the board for the past 15 years. I've never been the subject of a complaint before. Please know that I take my career as a licensed professional very seriously, and my responsibility to my clients is very important to me. As my work history demonstrates, I've spent 15 years working with very vulnerable populations in various capacities. I've also worked with multiple other agencies in different areas related to mental health, including the Office of Human Rights, the REBA system, state hospitals, and inpatient and outpatient settings, Department of Children's Services and Crisis Services. I've always done my best to serve others, clients, and supervisees from a confident, ethical, and professional manner. I've never received any work-related disciplinary actions or client complaints. I have been asked to serve in other areas as well, related to training of other professionals, as well as presenting on relevant subject matter in conference settings. I volunteer my time to support and guide future behavioral health professionals through Positive Paths, a nonprofit working to empower young females to achieve higher education. With all of my experience in education, I do not claim to know everything by any means. I consider myself a lifelong learner, and I'm always open to feedback and knowledge that will not only improve my clinical skill set and my supervisory skill set, but make me a better person. In review of the investigative report, I'm grateful to see that it was determined there was not clear and convincing evidence to support the complainant's allegation. As the report indicates, I learned a great deal about the allegation related to balanced billing, and during my time researching and responding to the complaint, I acknowledged that this billing practice, which affected 10 previous clients of the complainants from 1 and 2 years ago, was in fact not congruent with my insurance contracts, and I've rectified the situation to the best of my ability. I provided letters to those former clients as well as refunds. I also completed 5 hours of continuing education related to ethics. I do wish to formally apologize to the complainant for my lack of experience and knowledge in that area. I was unaware that this billing practice was in violation of my insurance contracts, which I did not understand that I should have held the complainant to at the time she was contracted with me. I'm thankful for this learning opportunity that's provided for me. I do wish the complainant, as a fellow licensed professional, had made an effort to work with me towards a resolution for those clients in the last 7 days of her contract when she identified the concern to me. In regards to the investigative report finding clear and convincing evidence to support that I engaged in activities not congruent with my scope of practice, I disagree and provided in the supplemental response my reasoning and evidence to support my role as a clinician and my duty to my client to complete the form as her acting healthcare provider. I hope that I was able to express myself clearly as to explain how I felt my actions were within my scope of practice as a licensed counselor and a doctor of behavioral health, and how I was qualified as a healthcare provider per the definition provided by the United States Department of Wage and Labor Division. I would like to acknowledge that I was not given a reasonable opportunity to respond to that allegation, having only been provided with that information just 7 days ago. However, I'm hopeful that my supplemental response contains the necessary information to support my work and my role as a mental health professional and provides you with the sufficient information to make a decision today. I do take accountability for my actions, and although I feel extremely confident from a clinical and clinical supervisory manner, I've been learning the ins and outs of private group practice over the last 3.5 years. I'm continuing to learn to better serve my clients and my supervisees. Serving others in the capacity that we do is not easy. There are times that I struggle with this great responsibility that I hold, caring for others. However, I'm always engaging in self-care, self-assessment, ongoing training opportunities to engage in this challenging work that I feel called to do. Take great pride and a sense of fulfillment in knowing that through my work and through the work of my colleagues and supervisees, I do believe we are helping our community to heal and become a better version of themselves. Thank you for allowing me to be heard this morning.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions?
You mentioned that you didn't have enough time to... I just want to make sure there's not some kind of due process issue here. You said 7 days ago you learned of this. Is there something else you would have done that you did not have time
to? No, I feel like I was able to provide the information that I wanted to in the supplemental. I'm confident with that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead. Sorry, I have a quick question. When you're filling out the FMLA paperwork and then we have the return, how do you fill out, so that's where a lot of the problems are, like the return to work form. And a lot of the forms have sections that allude to, can they lift things at work? You know, it's a lot of physical attributes. How do you handle all of that?
I don't comment on that because I'm not assessing that. I only comment on the ongoing treatment. And that whether we use something like, obviously I would have ongoing discussion. I usually put ongoing assessment, but I don't comment on any of the physical aspects.
And you just leave that whole section blank? Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
So this concludes the evidential portion of the meeting. As a reminder, this is the time for the board to deliberate, and we request that you not interrupt us during this time. And I am assigned to this phase. But before I move, I would like to ask for the board members' comments about this case.
Well, I support that it's not clear and convincing on the, we just don't have enough evidence that would support the initial complaint. Looking at the FMLA stuff, we're always kind of a little bit on the fence on some of the language, on some of the forms, and some of them are different than others. I'm not sure, I'm just kind of looking at some of the language, and it's, when we're saying we can't perform duties at work, I don't know that even our training would effectively allow us to actually really determine that. We can determine the symptoms, but can we really go out on can we really effectively say you can't do your job? I'll be transparent. I have my DBH. And I did a residency in, a year in a hospital, primary care in a hospital setting. Mm-hmm. Reading some of these forms due to that, would I feel like I can completely sign those? Yes, but it's very unclear, so I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I wish it was more clear, to be honest, so that we knew where we could and help, because it sometimes is a huge help. Right now I defer to using all of the skills I have and expertise I have to talking to the primary care physician on how to fill it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that route it just being unclear at this stage.
Yeah. In this kind of situations, I try to think about, do I know exactly what the job is, right? And do I know enough about the person, not just mental but physical? Mm-hmm. Can they do that? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I do also refer out.
We've had previous discussions here as differentiating psychotherapy versus assessment and those roles, and I think that's maybe one of the things here we're looking for the assessment for FMLA versus psychotherapy and the assessment for the FMLA.
Mm-hmm. And I have traditionally been like the squeaky wheel on this issue because from a social justice perspective, I think often it's the behavioral health providers who people are seeing for these things. They see them more often than they see the primary care providers, but I will just state for the record that it has been our board's position to, I think we have consistently said the right thing to do in these circumstances is to write a referral to a primary care physician who would then be making these determinations. So, just so we're clear.
Well, I wonder if the doctor of behavioral health changes that at all in this situation. That's the piece I'm kind of sticking with.
That's unique for me too. So just in evaluating this case, it's unique training. And I haven't found, I probably should have asked the licensee, I haven't found where it's actually stated anywhere exactly what that looks like. But I do know the training we go through, and I know the residency rotation I know that I went through. I don't know that the program is still doing that necessarily. I would need to ask that. But
And if you're providing that under this license, then we're following this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think I get it, and I'm okay not finding for the violation. I think we just, because this is sort of such an unusual case, I think just important to say out loud that usually what you should do in this circumstance is refer to a primary care.
Yeah, and I think part of that, too, we could document in a letter of concern.
And I guess, if we're not... I actually am okay not having a letter of concern here just because it's so unusual. I don't know. I sort of defer to the clinicians. What do you guys think?
Well, I think because it's so gray, like Dr. Bailey kind of spoke to and has this training and background, from my perspective as a clinician, I would say we always want to err on the side of caution, and it sounds like that would be referring to a PCP to make that determination.
I think because we don't know for sure. I worry about our standard of review is very high.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because we don't know for sure, I would be more comfortable doing nothing in this case. But
I think Dr. Bailey's question to the licensee was helpful of, you know, the return to work portion, and that licensee did not comment on the lifting heavy items or whatnot, just based upon mental health. And so that does make me feel more comfortable with a dismissal.
Yeah. So in the review of all the documentation, I don't think that there's enough evidence to support the allegation. I do think that there is evidence to support the extending beyond boundaries placed by our license.
And I guess that's where I don't know. I don't know if it extends the scope or not. I think that's where it's unclear.
I don't think we have plan to mention that much on that one.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
I'm on record to say that. I think ideas around what letters a clinician can or can't write is super great for me. Then we talk about obtain proper training, but I don't know what training you get to write a letter. So it's just, it's a topic for me that I have mixed opinions about.
If she had an MD, there would be no doubt that it would be appropriate what she did. And I think this is, I have a question whether we can regulate this behavior, and because I just don't want us to do something we should not be doing.
I think that there is a gray area, right? I was, you know, debating. For me to determine that there's no violation on extending boundaries, then how are we going to the next one, right? Are we going to have to go to the forum and see what did they complete and what they didn't complete for us to determine if, you know, there was a violation or not?
For me, if it was a straight license, I would be taking my normal position. I just know that I do bring a bias to knowing what my training is in this degree, if you will, and for the pieces that are commented on, we are trained. I know the tenure I was there, I was trained to do that. I did it in a primary care facility, like in a hospital. So if she, I was just looking, you know, she states, you know, that her capacity, her expertise is behavioral health, and that is what her doctorate's in. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes it great for me. It's not the license part at all.
I think it's going to be unusual for these to come back, and frankly, I mean, it's uncomfortable getting a board complaint, so the best way to avoid getting a board complaint is to avoid getting near anything that's gray. And so I think everyone sort of heard our analysis, and you never want to be a close call, so hopefully people just process it appropriately.
So if you're dismissing it, then you're then giving her permission to do this moving forward?
That would be a good mistake, right?
Well, but I think the difference is in DVH, like you were saying. Not if it was a standard licensee where that wasn't, we are very clear on that guideline. But can we say that she extended outside the scope of that when she has additional training as a DVH that we're hearing about? I think that's where that intricacy is.
I just don't know if what she put in this FMLA paperwork, you need a DVH to do. Say anything about medical. She said behavioral health. I'm just saying, like, you don't need a DPH to write what you wrote. I think that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think most of us, when we think about FMLA, we're thinking about the physical doctors and stuff, but if the person's only issue is mental health, then cannot someone who's trained in mental health make that decision?
I think we might be going a bit rogue here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I am always the one saying, let them do this stuff. And we have not traditionally let them do that stuff. I am, like, now towing the party line on that because I get it. I went and took a deep dive on the ethical rules for licensed professionals, and you're not allowed to do it according to the ethical rules. I think this is a very unusual case because of an additional qualification And what I do not believe we have the authority to decide is whether that additional qualification gives this person the authority to make this decision. And, you know, we're not regulating that. And, you know, if she had an MD, like I said, we wouldn't be questioning this. And so, you know, I think short of, you know, going into an executive session to get legal advice, I don't think we've got it.
Madam Chair, can I just share something, just to kind of, and mainly for the public, because I think it's always difficult for me as the executive director when we start going back and forth on something that we've always found to be not appropriate. I think that then begins to give mixed messages. So I think that if you all believe the information before you and possibly her education might make this look a little bit different, you know, just a thought of maybe dismissing it with a letter of concern, that would memorialize it. I think it would also give the licensee the message that you really shouldn't be doing these moving forward. Because if you don't give her that message, then you're giving her and anybody else that might have extra training the message that they can do these. And those are just my thoughts. I mean,
okay, full circle. I'm on board with the letter of concern. I think if it's specific enough and saying, you know, just to be clear, this license does not permit you to do that. You know, it's on you to determine whether this other thing does, but you better not be using your license for this, then I think that would probably make sense.
Okay, I understand that. At the same time, if we are saying that this is allowed based on the other...
we're saying we don't know.
Or we don't know, right? And I want to go on record saying I still would not advocate doing it. I'm just saying that I think it could be gray on did that allow, depending on the training, was there some thought that it would be allowed due to that kind of higher level training. I still think, I mean, as a person on this board, I still would advocate we shouldn't still do them. It's so gray, and it isn't very clear that we are allowed, so I would want to use my expertise to help the MD, you know, MD hurry up and sign off on it.
Okay, so I'm ready to make a motion. Okay, so I don't find clear and convincing evidence for the allegations. I do find evidence for violation of ARS 32, 32, 51, 16.
If we find for the violation, then we can't do a letter of concern.
So if you wanted to do a letter of concern based on the information that I shared, your recommendation would be a dismissal with a letter of concern in regards to writing FMLA paperwork for clients.
Okay. Dismiss the case and offer a letter of concern.
Issue a letter of concern in regards to doing FMLA for clients.
Mm-hmm.
That's your motion?
Yes.
Bailey, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We need to do a roll call?
No.
Okay. Thank you. That concludes our case.
Mm-hmm. Ask if there's nay.
Oh, any opposed?
Okay.
For the record, this is Patricia Dobetz, and I've resumed, and so has Dr. Hennigan. And we are going to go to agenda item 7I, Jolene Wallace. Ms. Wallace present?
Good afternoon, Ms. Wallace.
Hi.
We're going to first hear a brief summary from board staff.
Madam Chair, members of the board, at this time, Ms. Wallace is currently on an interim consent agreement. She is coming back before the board to determine whether or not she can be released from that interim consent agreement, and if so, if the board wanted to consider finding the L violation for impaired practice, With all that being said, the majority of the analysis would be considered confidential medical information in regards to behavioral health. I think after you review it, it's possible the board members may be able to determine it, whether or not she should be released and how you want to move forward with a possible consent agreement. If not, my suggestion is if you have questions in regards to what's in the analysis in regards to her behavioral health, that you consider going into executive session to review confidential records. And again, that would be up to the board members if they felt that it was necessary.
Thank you, Ms. Zavala. Are there questions from board staff? Or board staff? Ms. Zavala, so you would have up to 5 minutes now to address the board.
I have received a lot of treatment in the years since I have been off of work. And I feel that I am in a better place right now, especially being off for that year. I have been much, much happier, you know, being out of the environment that I was working in. With my providers have also agreed that I'm in a better position. I know my nurse practitioner psychiatrist wrote a letter explaining how I was compliant with medication, appointments, lab work, as well as therapy.
What's your current therapy frequency or regimen?
So right now I do every 2 weeks because my therapist she's in school, so she doesn't have a lot of availability, but it is every 2 weeks, and if I need it, it can go one, 2 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working with her to start EMDR.
Thank you.
Thank you. So you mentioned you're experiencing like things are better due to not being in the work environment you were previously.
Yes.
And so entering back into working, how would you make sure that you weren't, you know, obviously unintentionally in that environment? Or what if you found yourself in an environment similar in the future? How might you handle that?
I have learned a lot not working, especially in that hospital. I've learned a lot. I am currently working, but not in a licensed area, and I have learned to have a lot more boundaries. I have learned a lot of self-care that I do, and just being around people who are positive.
So you feel like you'd be able to step out of that situation if you needed to?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
What would be, Ms. Voss, your ideal clinical setting working with utilizing your license?
I have now taken a different approach than I was. I want to work, which I am into working with foster and adoption. So that's what I'm doing right now. But I want to be able to continue that.
In the same setting or as a licensed professional providing psychotherapy?
No, I don't want to do psychotherapy at this time.
Okay.
But yeah, with a license.
Another question. Does your job, will there be differentials in your job if you have a license? Like, would this job require a license, even though you're not providing psychotherapy?
It doesn't require a license right now, but it would help to have a license.
Okay, thank you. Any other board members have questions? Right, this will be our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. Ms. Plasius, and a reminder to everybody, I think we have a lot of information in front of us, and we can speak in generalities, but if there's something specific, we keep in mind what Ms. Zavala said in terms of going into executive session.
Yeah.
So thank you for being here with us today, Ms. Wallace. It's helpful to hear you and see you and see, the progress that you've made from for yourself. You're engaging in your self-care and your therapy and just really working to become healthy. So it's really great to see. We do have, I want to have some discussion because we do have the violation here, I believe, the ARS 32-32-51-16L, but that was, but she's on the ICA, so we need to first determine if we're going to release, correct?
Correct. And if we would offer a new CA,
okay,
as part of that agreement to release.
Okay. And so, what are thoughts from my colleagues about having a very strict, tight CA and potentially releasing with stipulations of continuing her self-care, her therapy, her psychiatric care, and a potential stay in suspension if need be. That's kind of where my thoughts are, but wanting to hear from anybody else.
I think we heard also that she's not engaged in a position at work where she would be working towards licensure, or there would be a requirement of clinical oversight. And I don't know if we can or not, but I know I think it might be helpful just to have someone to check in with in that way, regardless of the position or working towards hours towards licensure. But I don't know if we're able to mandate that in a CA, or I don't know.
The supervision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So are we talking like a disciplinary?
Well, first we're talking about, so what's on the table is releasing from the ICA with acceptance of a CA. But I think what you two had opened the door for was whether or not that CA would include clinical supervision, and she's not seeing clients. So I think that's providing psychotherapy services. I think, Ms. Savala, you were going to speak to that.
Well, I was just going to say the way our board defines clinical supervision, I think that would be very difficult to include that in a consent agreement since she isn't providing psychotherapy. I'm not sure what that check-in period would look like other than memorializing it to the licensee for something for her to consider that check-in if necessary with somebody.
Is it something we could stipulate in there? So if she decided during the course of 2 years she was going to go back into psychotherapy, then at that point that would...
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we could do that. I would suggest that if you choose to do that, that you put a time frame on it. For example, if you were to put in the consent agreement that she would be required to get clinical supervision for 24 months, once she gets that CA, it would be stayed because she's not providing psychotherapy. But once she started working, then it would be the 24 months. So it could be indefinite. So maybe you could consider stating in the record that, if she chooses to go back to psychotherapy within the 24 months, she would have to get clinical supervision. And that way it wouldn't stay open for years and years and years.
Are we comfortable having the discussion of release with the CA?
I am. I think she's demonstrated quite a bit. I think what we have in front of us is straight. I would want to see the counseling.
Thoughts on stay suspension if need be, if that arises. Well, I guess I am ready to make a motion unless anyone else has anything they'd like to share.
What about education? Anything else that we would want to have? So we talked about counseling and continuing the psychiatric care.
Maybe just on self-care, just continuing to have, three CEs on self-care and that importance, and just identifying when
could be a combo of self-care and burnout.
And I'm sorry?
Self-care and burnout. Like the
yes, love it, yes.
Yeah. A toxic environment when I'm getting to that point.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I like that.
And so along those lines, and I don't know if it would be part of some kind of a course or a CE, to address resiliency, right? Because then they talk about also like burnout and, you know, prevention and things like that. But I don't know if any of, are there just CEs on this agency?
You know, that is on burnout, compassion, fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope that they cover that in there. I don't know if I've seen any that are specific to that.
So if it's covered under burnout, you know, then we're good.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I'd like to see the counseling remain at twice a month for the next...
for the next year
and then at the discussion of the therapist.
Yeah.
Just to ensure that support, especially since we don't have supervision in place.
Could she be released after that 1 year?
At the discussion of the therapist.
And continue with psych care as well.
Yeah.
With the therapy as well as the
psychiatric,
is there an amount of time for that?
I think as determined by the provider.
Yeah. I think with the psychiatric care, it's the compliance with medication.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then the clinical supervision?
To add that in if she decides to begin psychotherapy.
And then what would the frequency be?
I think maybe twice a month. For first year, and then second year potentially once a month, but as an LMSW, if she's working towards her hours, she may need.
I would just suggest we leave it at twice a month because if she, to Ms. Zavala's point, if she doesn't start providing psychotherapy until the last year of the CA anyways, mm-hmm. then we want it to be mm-hmm. the twice a month.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be advocating to that so that it's simple for board staff and provides maximum support.
I'm in agreement with that.
And is the psychiatric care for the 24 months or for 12 months?
24 months. Mm-hmm.
Do we want to do a motion first to release from the ICA?
I would motion to release from the ICA.
Make a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
And then for the L violation, ARS 32-3051-16L.
Yes, so I would move to find for the violation and offer consent agreement.
You need to find the violation first.
Yeah, I will do that. That's my motion.
Okay.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. And Ms. Zavala, do you want to read back what you had before Ms. Palacios makes her motion?
Yes. We will be offering the licensee a consent agreement for 24 months. She'd be required to take 3 CEUs in self-care and burnout. She'd be required to continue seeing her current therapist at twice a month for the first year, after the first year, at the recommendation of that therapist, which would also include early release. She would also be required to continue her psychiatric care as determined by the provider, particularly with compliance with medication. Additionally, if she gets in a position where she's providing direct client care, she would then be required to get clinical supervision twice a month for 24 months, where she would work on self-care and burnout documentation.
I believe Ms. Palacios wanted the state suspension.
Well, but I was making sure we had all the focus for the clinical supervision because we didn't really talk about that. If she was getting clinical supervision, burnout, self-care, boards, rules and statutes, documentation, is there anything else? Okay. And then, and if not, she could be released at the end. And then in addition to that, a state suspension.
Can
can someone explain the state suspension part?
So this, if you put a stay on the suspension, what that looks like is as long as the licensee is compliant with the consent agreement, she would be able to continue to practice. We often do it in situations like this where she were to skip therapy or go off her medications. It's a simpler way for boards to be able to lift the stay, and then her license would be suspended.
Gotcha.
And then if not signed, she would remain on the interim consent agreement.
That is my motion.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Tricia Dobrat.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Polly Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Adelaide Samik.
Aye.
Diane Palacios.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Motion passes. Best of luck to you.
So you're going to get you'll get a letter from board staff outlining of all this, and it's a shift from the interim to you would have a license, but you would be on probation. So you'd be able to practice, but it would outline the terms of what we'd like to see you do to keep your license.
Okay. The license would be reinstated?
Yep.
Thank you, guys.
Best of luck to you. We will now go to, I just may finish the complaint and disciplinary. Okay. We'll go to 7C. Vera Franks is the complainant present for that matter. Ms. Franks, you can come forward, please. Oh, you press again. There you go.
There you go. Turn it on.
No problem. We're going to first hear from board staff.
Madam Chair, members of the board, if you notice in the member portal, we uploaded yesterday a signed non-disciplinary consent agreement from our licensee, and that signed non-disciplinary consent agreement is before your review today in regards to the conduct that occurred that didn't appear that it rose to the level of disciplinary action. So it's here for you to consider that today.
Thank you, Ms. Law. Any questions for board staff? Ms. Franks, you would have up to 5 minutes if there's anything additional you'd like to add.
Yes. I was wrong. And I'm sorry. I didn't know what I didn't know. Since the complaint has happened, I have taken over 13 hours of training in ethics, to which I have enjoyed, actually. And listened to quite a few board meetings and really dove into a lot of different things that I found super fascinating. As I often tell people, the minute I quit learning is the minute I leave this world. So it was quite fascinating to learn. And in that training, I have come to a much better understanding of what a dual relationship is, and I can outline it way better than I ever could before. So I have taken this opportunity to take it as a very great learning opportunity, and for that I am thankful.
Thank you.
Board members,
have
any questions?
Thank you. All right, this is your time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. Thank you. I believe
you're leading
this discussion.
Yes, I have. Thank you. I have read all the information and you know, the consent agreement, and I am proposing that we accept in this case.
I would just say, on the record, what sways me from other similar cases but differentiates this one is, you know, the potential dual relationship. There were multiple receptionists, so there wasn't, if there had been one receptionist, that was the go-to person, and there were daily, you know, contact and working as colleagues, I may have thought differently, but that's what did it for me. So just considering how to differentiate that, yes. So I also agree with accepting the NDCA. Anybody feel different? You want to make a motion?
I move to approve the signed consent agreement.
Last year's second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Best of luck to you. Thank you for being here.
You.
Have a great day. You too.
See you.
see, and we have a potential dual relationship going, and not one thing is brought up in supervision about this. It just feels like there's a potential over, I don't know, I hope not, but is the supervisor even looking for stuff like this or asking? I mean, it feels like she also talked to her supervisor, you know, went for help and guidance, which we would assume associates would do.
Mm-hmm. I went back and forth. I think for me, one of the considerations was the timing of it. Like, it was after it had been established, and the referral and assignment came from the CEO, and so I think I can see that I'm the supervisor again. I don't think it was best practice, but I went back and forth okay. about my concerns. I don't know how others feel.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat as you, and I think it would be difficult, and we talk about this often, for that supervisor to then, you know, say to the CEO, oh, well, wait, this might not be appropriate, but we do want to make sure that that's happening, right? We want to encourage
advocating.
Yes, for that to be happening. So
the CO doesn't necessarily have all of the training that we would on, you know, potential harm that could happen to a situation like that, even putting a licensee in a bad spot.
Yeah. Right, right, yeah.
Associate, I mean, I just, that's a bad spot to be in as a trainee.
And that's why I think if the supervisor had been consulted before and gave the thumbs up or allowed it to, you know, happen, I think that's where, for me, it was the timing of when it seemed like the supervisor found out. Maybe we could open a complaint and find out more information if you had been consulted.
I think I would like a conversation, and I'm hoping nothing comes out of it.
I think it'll also help us to understand the dynamics of the organization as well. You know, was this person really far away, or there are multiple sites, and no, right? Like, I think all of that plays a part, you know. Are we all in one building on top of each other, or is this person in Tucson and this one's in Phoenix? I mean, you know.
If there's nothing there, then nothing will come up, and that will be great. And,
yeah.
You know, maybe it'll bring some awareness. And if there is, then we didn't miss it. And hopefully other supervisees get better guidance. It's an important role as a supervisor, and trainees rely on that. I have a passion about that. Yeah, I move that we open up a complaint. I don't have the supervisor's name ahead of me, but
on the clearest supervisor.
Supervisor, yeah.
Is there a second?
Yeah, a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Dr. Bailey. And last on our disciplinary items, G, Arturo Morales. Is the applicant here? Ms. Zavala.
Madam Chair, members of the board, you might remember something like this a couple months back coming before the board. There was a statute change, and then inadvertently board staff referenced the wrong statute. So we're bringing this denial back to the board so that you can adopt for Arturo Morales the denial letter as it relates to ARS 323275A6 as well as ARS 323275A5. All I have.
Thank you. Is there a motion to amend the denial letter to include both statutes 323275A6 and A5?
Bailey, so moved.
Finnegan, second.
You need a roll call, Matt?
No.
No. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Quick moment here before we move forward, and I apologize for this. Thanks to my wonderful staff for pointing out that I missed it. Could we briefly go back to Jessica Lewis, agenda item F? On that report, there was a note on whether we wanted to open up a complaint on Elizabeth Diamond based on a 622 email where it indicates that the supervisor may have been aware licensees actively seeing clients in a private practice setting unlawfully.
I recused from that matter, so I'm not going to lead that discussion.
I'll propose that.
Okay. Is there a discussion about it follows the same premise. I don't want to repeat myself, but I just said it. So for the same reasons, I would want to open that up. So I move that we open a complaint or open up an investigation with Ms. Diamond in the Lewis.
I second.
In reference to Lewis case.
Nick, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Thank you, Ms. Fowler. Thank you, board staff.
At this time, let's take a 15-minute break. We'll come back for our formal interview. So it's 12:55. We'll come back at 1:10. And for the record, Ms. Palacios will be leaving the meet. All right, we're going to come back to order. It is 1:11, and it's now time for our formal interview pursuant to ARS 323281. This is a formal interview of Deanna Perry, case number 2023-005. Licensee and counsel are here. Would you please introduce yourselves for the record?
Hi, my name is Deanna Perry.
It's Sarah Stark, counsel for Ms. Perry.
My name is Patricia Dobretz. I'm the board's chairperson. Since you weren't here this morning, we're going to do introductions for the record, starting with Ms. Knapp.
Holly Knapp, professional member.
Mark Shen, professional member.
Lynette Hennigan, professional member.
Emily Bailey, professional member.
Mary Kuhn, Lodd, public member.
Megan Kramer, public member.
Alana Sami, professional member.
And then we have our executive director, Ms. Zavala, and then our legal advisor, Mona Baskin. So you received by notice informing you of the matters to be discussed today, the process for the formal interview, and the possible actions the board may take. The purpose of this formal interview is to inquire into the facts, circumstances of this case, and to decide the outcome. We've read all the materials submitted to us to date, and we'll first hear a brief overview of the case presented by the executive director, and then you and counsel will have an opportunity to address the board. Again, the audio we are being recorded, and the audio will be posted to the board's website. We ask that everybody speak clearly and into the microphones. And Ms. Zavala, start.
Yes, Madam Chair. Before we begin this matter, I think it would be important for the board members to take a look at the document that was passed around. This is in regards to clinical supervision that Ms. Perry has been receiving since June of 22 by Kirk Clark, and I think it's important for this matter for this to be read ahead of time.
All right. So if we're going to review this, please set it aside when you're ready. Ms. Lowe, do you have a summary of the case?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, so this is going to be a lot of information. So Ms. Perry came before our board previously in regards to an application for an LCSW, as well as she currently holds an LMSW license with us. The issue came before the board because of concerns in regards to the clinical supervision that was being completed. With that being said, at that time, the board reviewed this matter, and they found several violations. They found ARS 3232516K, as it relates to NASW Code of Ethics 3.01, Supervision and Consultation, as well as ARS 3232516L, Impaired Practice, as well as 3232516I, Making Any Oral or Written Misrepresentation. And at the time of that meeting, the board members found these violations and offered her a consent agreement on her current LMSW license. And at the same time, the board members denied her LCSW application for unprofessional conduct based on the same violations and the same facts. As you all are aware, when we do a motion, when we offer a consent agreement, part of the motion is to invite them to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remand to a formal hearing. In this particular case, Ms. Perry requested a formal interview, which would give her an opportunity to come back before the board and have an opportunity to have some more questions by the board members and consideration of a possible different outcome in this matter. And that would be in lieu of a formal hearing. With that said, in addition to that, her LCSW application, as I previously mentioned, it was denied for unprofessional conduct. A denial letter was sent out, and at that time, a formal hearing has been requested. So we have two pending items right now. We have the LCSW that's pending a formal hearing for denial for unprofessional conduct, as well as we have her current LMSW, where we have a consent agreement that has been offered with the stipulations of supervision as well as education. Based on a discussion that I have had with Ms. Stark in regards to this matter, the concern was that they felt like this was kind of what we would refer to as a double whammy, that not only did we take action on her license, but we also took action on her application. And I'll be the first to tell you that that is correct, and the board has the authority to do that. And the board has done that in the past with cases that they felt rose to that level where it needed to be done. In other cases, oftentimes, the board will only take action on the current license and they won't do anything with the application, and it lets it take its own course, which is usually going to be denied from the failing to meet anyways. So just to kind of lay out with that. So that's the concern, and so it's coming before you today for you to process whether or not the board would consider leaving the denial of the license of the LCSW as it stands. Then there would not be a formal hearing. It would be memorialized with the conduct that occurred by Ms. Perry. She additionally will continue to lose all of those hours that were acquired during that time. And but what I bring to you today is to consider maybe on her current license, which is LMSW, instead of offering a consent agreement, to maybe possibly dismissing it with a letter of concern in regards to, you know, whatever the board feels would be right, such as maybe a misrepresentation about being, more transparent with the board, and maybe even, you know, pointing to the denial letter. I think that at the end of the day, even though the board is allowed to take action on both, this would be something that I think that Ms. Perry could rehabilitate from. And because of her conduct, she does lose 2 years of her clinical supervision hours. I think you can also see by Mr. Clark, who submitted the supervision. She's been seeing Mr. Clark since the beginning of that complaint. And I think I will stop there and let Ms. Stark share her information. And then, of course, if you have any other questions in regards to the process or what this looks like or concerns, I'll be available for any questions.
Does anybody have any questions at this time? Let's start. Oh.
Go ahead, Ms. Knapp.
I'm just kind of trying to process it all. I want to make sure I understand the process correctly. So when we had denied the application as well, that doesn't necessarily, her LCSW application, that doesn't necessarily prevent her from reapplying, right?
Correct. At any time, she could reapply, but when she reapplies, she would have to have her 1,600 hours of direct client contact as well as 100 hours of clinical supervision.
Start with the informal hearing you have, or interview you have, the option for an opening statement, or do you want to waive that and go to case presentation?
I'll waive that and go to case.
And Ms. Perry, can I swear you in case you testify?
Me too.
Raise your right hand. I now place you under oath. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony that you may give is the whole truth?
The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
All right. Let's start. You can proceed.
So just briefly, and to follow up on sort of the question that you had, the denial, obviously it doesn't refer to applying, but there is a disciplinary action on record. So that does stay on record in the action. So at this point, I would just urge to consider the action that she's taken in the last year. Nobody is here contesting that, so it's probably not hard. Responsibility for that. She has already completed the review that were required in and as Ms. Zavala said, she has been working I guess we would just ask the board to consider, and obviously you'll have to question Ms. Perry and follow up information, but to consider Ms. Zavala's letter of concern on the ability of medical and then having that disciplinary action and dialogue.
Questions for questions? All right, this will be our chance to deliberate and talk amongst ourselves. My concern with the proposal, I think the supervision that's in place is great and the steps taken are great. My concern with not having the CA in place that we originally offered is, well, the denial may capture and memorialize the behavior that led to this. We don't have anything in place to monitor and oversee that this quality supervision and the other things that we were concerned with are continuing. And I remember back to when we originally heard this case, and I've reviewed the materials again. I have significant concerns of what led to these violations that we've done. The relationship with the supervisor that then snowballed into misrepresentation and the behaviors of the licensee, and then a lack of transparency and honesty with the board. So to me, there were a lot of layers that led us to find those violations. So I have concerns with not having a CA in place, but that is my opinion.
Madam Chair, can I make one comment in regards to the supervision? Just to be clear, Ms. Perry is currently in supervised private practice. Not suggesting that will help, but just suggesting that she will have to continue to get clinical supervision while she's in supervised private practice.
There's nothing to say that she doesn't wrap that up and go on to do something else. And again, just the nature of the behavior that led to us finding the violation is where my concern stems. And to not have any report mechanism that we can actually regulate, that's, and again, I'm open to, that's just my opinion.
Other clinicians
out loud, what is, I think I'm confused just a little bit on if just what's proposed. Can you just confirm it again?
So when we heard the case originally, we found the violations on the current license and issued a CA.
Right.
And then we also took action on the application and denied the application. Yeah. And the denial was for unprofessional conduct. So the behavior is memorialized in both places. The request and bringing it to the formal interview is to continue with the denial and memorializing it that way, but to
dismiss the original complaint with a letter of concern or something, again, memorializing the behavior, but there wouldn't be the CA that we had originally offered.
If I'm thinking about this right, if we separated these things completely, if those two things didn't happen at the same time, likely, right, hearing everything that happened, we would have found for the violation, done the CA, and then the application just gets denied down the road, right, if we had not brought that piece.
We're not meeting the requirements.
So I don't know that that piece over here, that application piece, would have changed anything that we did with the current license and the current CA. Is that seeming accurate? I'm just trying to figure out if I'm thinking about it right.
That's my opinion, because the CA was based on the behavior, not just memorializing it, but like, here's our concerns about what has transpired, and the CA is to rehab and to monitor and ensure the protection of the public.
What would if we didn't make that motion to deny the license right then and there, what would it have likely been denied for down the road?
Because the supervision didn't meet, so her work experience and supervision because of the violations and her application didn't meet the requirements because of the supervision and work experience wouldn't have counted.
Right, and so as opposed to it being recorded as being denied for unprofessional conduct?
And I'm stating that correctly, Mr. Ballard.
Yes, I mean, denial for unprofessional conduct is discipline, and it's going to be reported to the National Practitioner Data Bank, and it's going to be public. If you get denied for failure to meet requirements, it doesn't get reported to the National Practitioner Data Bank, it's not public either. So,
and if we do a letter of concern, is that discipline? That's not, is it? So that doesn't show up.
You know, I've been thinking the letter of concern kind of negates the facts that we found.
In my opinion, there's two parts of this. There's the memorializing, right, those facts, which are also in the denial letter, which I think is what's being argued, is then it's at least memorializing the behavior. But to me, it's not just the memorializing of it. It's we thought it was this egregious that we offered the CA for these reasons. I have a difficult time undoing.
And I think I'm with you. It's like that all makes sense to me in the part of the normal process. And maybe the thing that to look at is denial for a different reason. If that's the part where that didn't go how we usually see
either
it.
Way, they could have brought it to us. So even if we heard it separately, if we did, like, I think the concern is twofold for them. So I think they could have came for the formal interview, requested the formal interview. Regardless.
For the denial, for the denial for the license, it would only be a formal hearing.
No, not that. But I mean, if we had done the CA, she's saying if we took the application out of it, if we just took the keys that day, we let the application proceed, if we offered a CA, licensees have the right to request a formal interview.
Correct. But going back to what I said at the beginning, you know, I don't want to speak for the licensee, but if we only took action on her associate license, I don't think we'd be here today. I think it was the fact that we took action on her application denied from professional conduct for the same violation, same findings of facts, as well as we took action on her current license.
So is denying the application, like in this situation, is that common practice of the board?
I wouldn't say that it's common practice, but in the past, the board has determined based on the conduct whether it merited to also deny for unprofessional conduct. So in some cases, we've only taken action on the application, on the license, and didn't do anything with the application. But there have been on occasion where we've taken action on both.
Would it make more sense to say we want to deal with the CA and then on the license just do the denial for failure to meet?
They didn't bring that back to us. I don't believe we have the authority to make that shift.
Yeah, it's not on the agenda. It's currently scheduled for a formal hearing.
Yeah, I think that's what I was, yeah, kind of.
I don't think I'm comfortable with just the CA.
My argument is...
No, with the letter of concern. I'm sorry.
What I really want feedback on is for, I think, us to think about our role here. To me, nothing has been presented to us to change what we found in the original hearing, so I don't know why we would undo what we did. To me, it doesn't change the behaviors that we thought were so egregious to take action on both. And so that's what I would say, is if anybody found something different, I think the supervision is great, but it doesn't negate what happened.
Yeah, I think this happens every once in a while where someone comes back and time has passed and the facts haven't changed. You know, usually when we change a decision, there's sort of a new fact we had not yet considered. So, I don't know, I just trust our judgment more in that moment when we were actually deliberating.
Was it a unanimous decision?
Mm-hmm. It was.
They were shaking their heads no.
It wasn't.
Is there a way to figure that out? Sorry to put you on the spot.
Yeah, can you pull up the minutes? It was for January, I believe.
It was a violation,
not the overall.
Are we allowed to say anything?
If it addresses what we're on the agenda for.
The discussion around nothing new has been presented. And I think, the intensive year of supervision, she had been undergoing that in the last period before you, but I don't think you had the documentation or the confirmation from Mrs. Clark that she was doing this for that amount of time and what they were covering and how well she was doing. So I would argue that that is a new fact that you didn't have before you in as much detail as when we met the last time.
It's fair. I appreciate that, but also the CA was to start getting supervision, so I get that that was happening beforehand, and I think we can discuss whether or not that applies or should be taken into consideration. But that supervision and what's transpired does not negate the behavior that led us to find those violations.
And I appreciate that, and we appreciate that. And I think, like I said, we're focusing on, that happened, and she knows it happened, and she knows it was wrong. And so she's trying to move forward and show you what she's done since that behavior occurred, including, the supervision and the CEUs that were recommended in the CA, even though not ordered. She's done all of that education already. I think we're just... She's not trying to absolve herself from responsibility for the things. We know that that happened, and like I said, we're just trying to focus on how she can be better. I think she has taken a long step to try to rehabilitate herself after that and learn the right way to be supervised, learn the right way to document. And I think all of that is memorialized with Mr. Clark's letter, but also we have extensive supervision notes from him that we can also are very, very detailed.
To me, that speaks to signing the CA and then asking for early release or demonstrating that through the CA process, starting back when the CA was offered. It doesn't, to me, change what we offer.
Madam Chair, for the record, it was a violation 16L. We had four individuals oppose it, but the motion still did carry. The overall consent agreement with the stipulations was unanimous.
And the denial? Sorry.
While she's finding that and I have some leeway, then as an alternative, we would ask you to consider applying the supervision that she has gotten with Mr. Clark if you need any more requirements to the terms of the offered CA.
We can definitely explore that. I mean, four voted nay, then we probably had a full meeting too, so we had 12 members present.
Yeah, and that was for the L violation.
You were the one who wanted to see that. Does that change anything?
Just seeing if it was a close call, I was trying to
make sure I remember correctly
our conversation.
Does anybody for procedural sake, if I were to make a motion, would it be to extend the original CA again, or do we have to find the violations again and offer a new CA?
we just, I think we have,
it's got some weird stuff in there.
So basically, you either reoffer the same consent agreement, or you can reoffer it with modifications.
And there's, it sounds like a request pending. Did you guys hear that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we can discuss that. I just want to make sure that the motion would be. So my motion would be to reoffer the original CA with the same findings of fact and the same findings of law, and then to accept the supervision that's taken place since the CA was originally offered. Is that an acceptable motion?
Yes, I think I would also ask for you to consider the education as well.
The education. Mm-hmm. That would be my motion. Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Amanda Hazard.
Aye.
Trisha Dobratz.
Aye.
Annette Hennigan.
Aye.
Paula Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Adelisa Meek.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you, Ms. Perry. Thank you, Ms. Stark, for being here.
Thank you.
Let's go to number nine, our licenses and denials. Ms. Savala, do you want to speak to licenses issued since our last meeting?
Since our last meeting, we've issued 235 licenses.
Wowza. Oh, board staff. And for denials, starting with counseling.
The Counseling Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of the following individuals and recommends their denial for licensure. One application based on a failure to take the required examination, and one application based on a failure to meet minimum requirements. Total denials of two.
There a second?
A second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
The Marriage and Family Therapy Academic Review Committee has reviewed the application of the following individual and recommends their denial for licensure. We have one application based on a failure to pass the required exam.
Is there a second?
Megan, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Social work?
The Social Work Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of the following individuals and recommends their denial for licensure. 12 applications based on failure to pass the required exam, 3 applications based on failure to take the required exam, and 1 application based on failure to meet the minimum requirements for a total of 16 denials.
Bailey, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
The Substance Abuse Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of the following individuals and recommends their denial for licensure. We have 5 applications based on failure to pass the required examination and 1 application based on the failure to meet minimum requirements for a total of 6 denials.
Bailey, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Where do we go next?
If we can go maybe 11 and then to 12.
Okay. So we're going to go to item number 11, our report from our treasurer, Dr. Bailey. I believe we have to table 11B.
Mm-hmm.
We do have 11A.
I do. The other financial report for your review. I move that we accept the financial report ending the period of April.
Is there a second?
No, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. We will go to agenda item number 12, and I'll hand it over to Ms. Savala.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm going to hand over agenda item A and B to Ms. Yabu.
The update on the portal.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the board. As far as 7A with the Bortle is coming, I promise you. Actually, we just completed a huge step. We completed the testing of the final product. So all of that configuration has been given to them, and they are supposed to deliver me the product any moment. I don't have it right now, but any moment I'm supposed to have it. Then the next step is they have to finalize some things that we need prior to launch.
launch, and I'm thinking launch will be end of June, beginning of July. I'm hopeful, but I know that it's near. So when we do have a final date, of course, there's going to be sort of a blackout period where our systems will be down. We'll be migrating the data over from our existing system to our new system, but we will tell everyone about that. So we will make sure to broadcast on our website as well as send an email letting you know when those blackout dates are. But I can attest to it's looking pretty nice. It's going to be so much more efficient. We just definitely need a little bit more training on our end, but it's going to be great. So good things to report with that.
And for those that are here or listening, they appreciate your patience when that blackout happens.
Please, thank you.
Item number B, audio. That is also coming. In fact, we can see it. It's right over there.
We haven't noticed a problem.
Seamless. Our new audio is almost all installed. We're just missing a few final parts that still need to be delivered. They've been on back ordered, as you know, for over a year. So this has been a project that we've all been waiting for a very long time. With that, there's going to be a learning curve, I'm sure, but I will assist as much as possible. But I can assure you that the audio is going to sound much better than what we have on our website right now. So we're really, really excited. The tentative date for the switchover is June 19th. Definitely don't quote me on that. I'm thinking closer to the end of the month, but hopefully by the next time we have a meeting in here, this will all be gone and replaced with the brand new audio. So very exciting. And then finally, the new chairs. They look great, right? We have new chairs. Hopefully they were more comfortable. They certainly look better. That was something that our board purchased. And, of course, it's shared with the other boards throughout the building. But that was the silver lining when it comes to the audio and the board as well.
Thank you, Ms. Yabu.
Next, we have on the agenda update on the proposed rules. So the proposed rules are currently with GRC, the Governor's Review Council. We'll be attending an online meeting on the 27th of this month, myself and Aaron, and we have asked our current board chair to join us as well. Not exactly sure what it's going to look like. Typically, when we go to GRC, it's not an issue. They review the information as long as they're okay with the rules and the changes. It's usually a pretty quick process. This time around, though, there are a few things that are up for debate from the public, so we don't know what that exactly is going to look like. So we go on the 27th, and then we go back on July 5th for final, so at our board meeting we'll be able to let you know if the rules have been officially approved and when they'll be going into effect. So next on the agenda is a review, consideration, and possible action. So this is a vote for Chairperson DeBrot's participation at the Counseling Regulatory Board's annual summit. This is something that the board voted our chairperson as well as Adelisa to attend the summit, which is going to be happening at the end of July. Mr. DeBrot asked me to bring this to the board members to make sure that they were still okay with her going, being that there's a possibility between now and then she will be replaced as a professional member on our board. With that being said, I reached out to the summit, who pays fully for this participation from our board, and they had no issues with Mr. Botts attending even if she wasn't on our board. With all that being said, I'm pretty sure she's still going to be here, but she wanted to make sure that if for some reason she was replaced tomorrow or the next day, that she would still be voted in to attend the meeting at the end of July. And we do need a vote on that.
So moved. Aye, ma'am.
Big second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, guys.
Another action vote, review, consideration, and possible action on the 2024 board meeting calendar. That was all uploaded to the member portal. It'll continue to be the second Friday of the month. It's really important at this time of the year that we not only place it on our website for transparency, but that our board members are aware and they get in their calendar for 2024 and make sure that they block out all those dates. Obviously, it's not written in stone. We move them around from time to time, but it's important for us to make sure that we get a room scheduled and that everybody's able to get on the calendar, and if we could get a vote on that would be great.
Is there a motion to approve the 2024 board meeting calendar?
Bailey, so moved.
Second?
Snap, second.
Yeah. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Next, let's go to review, consideration, and possible action on whether or not to open a complaint on Holly Judge. So this is a unique situation that I'm bringing before the board today. My purpose of bringing it before the board is because the individual that filed a complaint on Holly Judge filed it in January, and the way it looks when board staff receives a complaint is every complaint comes to my review, and when I review it, basically if the conduct were to be true, then we're required by law to open up a complaint. We do have various ones that get forwarded at other places. We get some that, even if true, wouldn't be unprofessional conduct. We don't open them. This particular case came before us, and the reason that I did not open it was because we had a copy of the court order and all of the information that indicated that Holly Judge was a court-appointed advisor, and it did not include psychotherapy. In addition to that, I uploaded to this memo attachment 2, which basically states anybody can do it as long as they have the appropriate education. So I chose not to open that in January, and since January I've received many, many emails and many, many phone calls, and it got to the point where the complainant was accusing me of basically hiding, you know, Ms. Judge from getting in trouble, and that made me very uncomfortable. So I wanted to bring it to the board for the board to determine if they wanted to open up a complaint for us to proceed, or if not, if they agree with my decision on not opening up the complaint.
I don't see how we can, as you said, in terms of jurisdiction, and we have all of the information, I think, to show that it's not within our jurisdiction, given that it did not include psychotherapy, and in addition that they were court appointed as an advisor. Maybe they take no action then?
I would, yes.
That'd be fine. And thank you for bringing it to us and representing board staff day in and day out.
Next on our list is review, consideration, and possible action regarding the annual election of board officers. We have the chairperson and the secretary-treasurer position available. So everybody jump at the same time.
I noticed we have a board member missing. Did she say she wanted to run for something?
I'm serious. Mr. Alfie has expressed interest.
Volunteer?
Volunteer.
I don't want to speak on her behalf, but I don't think so.
I will tell you, you know, we've been talking about this for a few months now because, you know, the leadership of, you know, obviously our board is important, but the leadership of the board also is very important. And we've brought it up several times because we're losing two of our very strong leaders, not just to their positions that they serve here, but possibly could be replaced any day as a professional member. So the only person that has expressed any interest is Adelisa Meek to be the chairperson. So, you know, is there anybody else that is interested in being the chairperson?
I would like to participate in some way, not necessarily the chairperson, if that's something, but I could throw myself in for the treasurer secretary position.
Is there anybody else besides Ms. Knapp that wants to consider the secretary treasurer position? So Julie had a motion for Adelisa to be, I'm sorry, I just took over.
I'm just going to leave.
The runaway train.
I'm so moved.
Second. All those in favor of Ms. Meek as a chairperson?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And is there a motion for Ms. Knapp to be elected secretary / treasurer?
Bailey, so moved.
There's a second.
Yes.
Meek. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Congratulations, Ms. Knapp.
So do we contact a board member to
training
guide us? Ms. Saval will be in touch, and then we can go to them.
Ms. Savala will talk you through next steps.
Yeah.
And
hopefully we'll
be fine. Dr. Bailey and I will be here.
Oh, it starts right away?
Yeah.
Right.
We're ready. Wait, was that, did this start immediately?
Yeah.
You don't get any training.
Can I undo that? I'm just kidding. Look at trial by fire. They're just saying good luck.
All right, do you want to go back to 10?
We can go back to 10 or we can do 12. I don't know what you want to do first.
Let's just stick with 12 then. We'll finish up 12. We have 12H, which I believe Ms. Baskin will be giving an update on Mr. Tupper and legal matters. So I would make a motion at this time to go into executive session for legal consultation. All those in favor, thank you. Aye. All right, we are back in general session. It is 2:03, and we are going to go back to agenda item number 10. 10B is a review, consideration, and possible action regarding our executive director, Ms. Zavala's annual performance review. We've had to table this from last month. Bless you. So the personnel committee have reviewed my compilation summary based on the feedback from each of you, and that was uploaded to the member portal as well. And just to give some of the highlights, based on the feedback from all of you, I summarized the strengths and achievements of Ms. Zavala, specifically that she continues to, after all of this time, demonstrate passion and investment in her role and in the board in general. She continues to set high expectations and a high standard for protecting the public and the integrity of our profession. She leads the team to continue processing applications and investigations in as timely manner as possible, despite the increased volume that we continue to see. And there's been the investment in time and energy into the projects to continue to keep up the quality performance, the portal, and the other technology advancements. Ms. Zavala, and this is the theme that I hear probably most often in the feedback from all of you and stakeholders and even our licensees and attorneys that appear in front of us, is Ms. Zavala's availability and approachability for stakeholders and board members to reach out. And she's really continued to shift, I think, the connotation and perception of the board in the public by doing ongoing presentations and involvements with different associations and educational programs. So we wanted to highlight all of that. And as several of us have had the opportunity to participate in local, state, and national conferences, we have heard from other boards and seen Ms. Zavala in action at that level and how well-respected she is within those communities. And that just demonstrates her leadership and dedication to the field. There's a lot more that I could say, but those are the highlights and the strengths and achievements. Looking at opportunities for growth and goals, you know, continuing to, especially with the increase in applicants, the possibility of state compacts and all of these things that continue to evolve in our field, for Ms. Zavala to lead her team in identifying policy and procedural improvements that can continue to improve the effectiveness and efficiency, being able to identify ways to ensure manageable agendas and workload for her team and for board members, continue to develop opportunities to educate professionals and the public, as well as opportunities for growth and development for new board members. It was identified to be able to identify possible means for board staff's feedback to incorporate and be considered by board members. So Ms. Zavala interacts not only with us, but with the board staff. However, we have little interaction with board staff, and so being able to find ways to communicate between the two and get the staff's feedback as well, and then create a balance for self and distribution of responsibilities, being able to delegate and communicate continue to onboard and train, identify staff needs, so that we can continue to be effective without it driving Ms. Cavallo into the ground. Those are the highlights. I do want to make a motion to go into executive session. I apologize to the public. We don't normally go into executive session this often, but make a motion to go into executive session to discuss personnel information. So I would invite Ms. Zavala to join board members in executive session. It's 2:07. Is there a second?
Really, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, we are coming back on the record. It is 2:21. We had a chance to further discuss the 2023 annual review that I compiled, and I would make a motion that we adopt this as Ms. Zavala's annual review to be forwarded to the governor's office, along with a request for a 4% increase in compensation. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And can we just say that the compensation increase we're asking for is merit-based?
Yes. Yes. And which a lot of the feedback can be found in our annual review to support that. We have a second. We have somebody second.
Yeah, I think we're all in favor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're all in favor. Oh, good thing I'm handing those over. All right. And that concludes agenda item number 10. All we have left are future agenda items. If anybody has anything they would like to see on a future agenda, let's make sure we pass that along to Ms. Zavala. And now would be our call for public comment. So I know there's a few of you out there. This would be your opportunity as members of the public to address the board. We're unable to engage or give feedback or answer questions, but if there's information you'd like to present or a statement you'd like to make on the record, this would be your opportunity to do so. Anybody? No public comment? Going once? Going twice? All right. Next meeting is Friday, July 21st. So a reminder that we moved that meeting. We are tight on quorum. There are 8 of us confirmed. Now I was able to move things around, so I'll be there. I'm still on the board. And we have Diane out for like an hour and a half. So Ms. Zavala, do you want to let us know who you have as a yes?
Yes, I have Mary as a yes, Bob as a yes, Adelisa as a yes, Polly as a yes, Lynette as a yes, Antoine as a yes, Patty as a yes, and then Diane is out between 10 and 11:30. And what that means is for that hour and a half, we have exactly 7. So it's imperative that if something changes in your world and you're not going to be able to be there, or once you get the agenda, if you have to recuse from something, it's imperative that you let us know as soon as possible. And just a note for right now, our agenda says something a little bit different, but as of right now, our meeting will be in Boardroom B, which is directly across the hall there. We're hoping that we can make a deal, because our new audio is going to be in here, so we're hoping to trade with another board, but be aware it might be in a different room next month.
All right. It has been a pleasure to serve as chairperson. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to
adjourn. And again, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.